Socrates, the only true wisdom consists in knowing that you know nothing.
That's us, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Sun comes up and rises high. It's so hot, it's gonna make me cry. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Well, hello. Welcome to the Modern Masculinity Project. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for supporting me each week and supporting these other guys every week. Perhaps this is your first time joining, and if that's the case, nice. My name is Brad Pankey. I am the host of this podcast, and each week I sit down with other men for open and vulnerable conversations on topics ranging from masculinity to women to being a parent, or to even discussing whether or not a hot dog is a sandwich, which it is not. The podcast is my attempt to normalize men being vulnerable with other men and learning what takes each of us to become the men that we are today. Each step that we took to that contributes to how we feel about ourselves as men. You know, speaking for myself, it just feels good to open up and hear what others struggle with in similar ways and that I have as a man. So, but I hope really at the end of the day that we can all learn from these conversations. Thanks to also to those of you who have subscribed to the podcast and rated it on iTunes. That's pretty awesome. There's more and more of you each week. If you haven't done so yet, it's an opportunity to support the show, support what I'm doing, support these guys by helping us kind of increase the eyes on the show. Let me know. It also lets me know what value you're finding in these conversations with a nice rating and review. It's also rad if you tell your friends. That's really how the word gets out about this kind of thing, is word of mouth. So I'm also here for the conversation. So the more the people involved, the merrier for me. Just love hearing from people. Episode number 10, y'all. We made it. Here we are. My first milestone, albeit a somewhat arbitrary one. 10 is a nice round number, I suppose. It's the first double-digit number. So I think it's a good enough reason to celebrate. Joining me for this very special episode is Tommy Freeland. You may remember him from last week. Well, this is part two of that conversation. We ran through our childhood together last week. We've had a lot of adventures together, but there were times where we kind of went dark, which we get into pretty deep here in part two. With that said, this episode is a standalone episode. It's evergreen, as they say. So listening to last week's episode is not required. However, it would give you a good framework for what we talk about in the episode that you're about to listen to. It's not necessary, but it was kind of a nice thing to go back and listen to so you can kind of understand our relationship. Listen to one, listen to both. Either way, Tommy is still a dude that whom I connect with, unlike any other, really, truly one of my heroes. So let's get to it. Without further delay, enjoy episode number 10 of the Modern Masculinity Project, Black Tar and Cigarettes, with Tommy Freeland.
I rush fast like the rapid river, a rough and heavy, steady flow. The rocks stop me for a moment, but I weave above and bend below.
Hello, Governor.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
So many fucking weird voices we used to make.
I was just thinking about Forrest Gump. Oh, yeah.
Jenny.
It's felt like we were so much better at those back then.
We probably thought we were. Just because we were.
That's probably true.
We were cool with being goofy and silly.
Something now, though, still, when I try to do, like, accents.
Yeah.
They used to be so much better. I could do, like, Australian or English or Scottish or Irish or whatever. Now it's, like, it's way more of a challenge to do it.
It is a bit of a challenge. And then you're, like, your Jamaican accent starts to sound like an Australian accent. You're like, oh, I'm just lost at this
same
point.
Same, dude. I used to be able to do a really funny Jamaican accent. But it's not as natural now.
No.
there's words that I struggle with where it used to just be easy.
Yeah. Well, I think it's some of it's too, like, we used to not practice, but we used to do it so often.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now you're a grown ass man. You don't really do those That's sort true. Of things.
Even just a couple years ago when me and Joey and Lisa went out one night to downtown Tucson, this big club crawl they were doing.
Yeah.
Me and her spoke in English accents the entire night.
Yeah.
To everybody that we talked to.
How did funny. That work out?
It was good. It was funny. Yeah. Yeah, it was a good time.
Were people like looking at you?
People
like,
would ask us where we're from.
Oh my God. It just shows you too, like, people don't know what
Ignorance.
The hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, cool, man. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's almost like we did this just yesterday for episode number one.
Feels like yesterday.
Feels like yesterday because it was. Yeah. Everyone's listening. We'll get these a week apart. But yeah. So let's just, we'll pick right up, pick up where we were there with the kind of getting out of high school part.
Yeah. Where were we?
Yeah. I think where we left off with, you know, we kind of ended at high school when the lost years is what we were tagging them, where we just didn't have a lot of contact and just both of our lives were, I went off to college and you went off into other things and
yep.
We haven't really talked about it. We talked about it a little bit in between yesterday and now, but just more from the standpoint of like how it, I'm curious just about how that time shaped you as a man, I guess, as opposed to exactly what you were doing. We'll get into that though. And then we also were going to talk about a little bit about how close in history, like, women just got voting rights and stuff like that too, and how that's kind of shaping society. So post high school, I mean, I just went right off to college.
Right.
I went right off to community college. It wasn't, I always took schools pretty seriously, as you know, so probably too seriously and missed out on a lot of different things. But I don't even know where you were in your head, like, right after college. You would have graduated in 2004.
Yep.
And so what did you do right after that?
And my parents, they ended up moving up to Oregon initially right after I graduated, pretty much. So me and Danielle ended up moving out down by the university. She
that was
going
your girlfriend.
To U of A.
That was your girlfriend we were talking about before.
Yeah, yep, that was my girlfriend at the time. So we got a house with some friends. They were all going to the university except for me. I was just going to work. And yeah, so my parents had just moved away. And, you know, I was pretty much just living the typical college kid life. Yeah. You know, we were down in a prime area, so I was just pretty much having fun, having a good time, living the life. Gosh, you know, it's funny. There's outside of that, it was just work and parties, having people over.
Yeah,
it was just kind of that lifestyle for the most part.
We were kind of talking before, you were just kind of existing as a young person.
Yeah, yep. Going through life with no worries at that point.
But just no real goals either, you said, had it said
no,
before.
Yeah.
Like, you weren't like saying, oh, I want to do X, Y, and Z in 5 years. You were just...
No, I had pretty much just jumped right into the family business too. So, right. Which is a little more difficult when my, you know, family moved up north. But, but we were doing gym and jewelry shows constantly. So... Sure. I would pretty much fly out and meet my dad, you know, in Vegas or LA or Chicago or whatever. Mm. And so I was pretty much traveling, doing that type of work, and then still had my part-time, you know, day job, Papa John's in Tucson.
Yeah. Slanging pizzas.
Yeah, making good money doing it. It's funny.
Did you deliver?
Yeah, delivery.
Oh,
always got good tips.
And I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good money. I mean, minimum wage, but the tips, man, I make usually at least 100 200 bucks a night.
Oh shit.
Yeah, it was really good.
That's cool. You brought up, you just said something interesting that kind of I didn't think about, like, how ambitious do you think you are?
I would say more so now than I was then, you know. Yeah. It's interesting.
Well, you were raised in your family business,
right? Yeah. Yeah. I so never had even the intention of like
doing anything else.
No. And part of that was just, there was nothing that appealed to me more than doing what I was doing, you know.
Yeah.
Going to, you know, I loved selling and retail aspect and doing the shows and
making jewelry and,
but yeah, there wasn't a lot of stuff that piqued my interest enough that I felt like, oh, I want to pursue that, you know, I could do that every day. it's funny. I didn't discover any of that type of stuff until my mid-20s.
Right. And your dad, I would say, knowing him, he's super ambitious.
Yeah.
But in like the most positive way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you find, how do you view ambition? Do you think, sorry, I'm still stuffed up obviously since it was yesterday, but, I don't know. How do you view ambition? Do you think there like are masculine traits within it? Do you think there are feminine traits within it? I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Gosh, you know, I don't. That's just me. You know, I see just as much ambition in my mom as I do my dad. And obviously they're, you know, a little different. They kind of direct their ambition towards different things, but they're kind of they've got so many different facets that they,
right. Right.
So that's,
and do you think somebody, or how would you view, not you, but do you think maybe society views ambitious women differently than ambitious men?
I do. Yeah. Yeah.
How so?
You know, I think that they get more, a little more spotlight and I think that's good, but I mean, for some reason, I think you notice more articles on a woman of the year, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I feel like that's something that's only that I've noticed maybe in the last 10 years more so.
Yeah.
With the change in media and social media and stuff like that.
Sure. It seems like.
So it didn't seem like they got as much recognition until
recently. For being ambitious.
Yeah. Yep. That's out there, you know, without having to dig into it.
Well, and even so, I would take that a step further. And I feel like sometimes when women are seen as ambitious, they're also, it's also a negative on them.
Yeah, yeah.
It also can be like, oh, that lady's kind of a bitch.
Right.
Because yeah, she's driving
so hard.
Depends on
that type of vibe, but you're putting off.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. And it's, and then, you know, you can have an ambitious guy who's like, oh, man, look at that go-getter.
Right.
Out there busting his ass.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying that, you know, obviously I'm not saying your mom is a bitch or, your dad is above her. But it's just interesting. So you just never connected ambition to like your manhood at all at that time?
No, yeah. Not really. But it, you know, it's funny, even like today, like, you know, I'm half their age and it's hard for me to like keep up with them.
Yeah,
so I recognize that, you know, it's like,
it's hard for anybody to keep up with your dad.
Yeah. But then, you know, the business is their baby, you right. know, it's like something they built up. So obviously they have a little bit more, you know, into it. And obviously I do too. It's also my livelihood. So
right.
I take it seriously. Sure. You know, I can't go to work and not be productive and feel okay about it.
Yep.
You know, being a family business, which, you know, which is the way it should be. But obviously you're going to have those other people that go to their typical jobs or a dead end job, you know, and they could care less if they're just on their phone the entire time,
right.
You know,
just disconnected.
They're just collecting a paycheck. Yep. Yeah. It doesn't really matter. You know, it doesn't matter to them, the success of that business. So,
right. Is there anything about work, or what is it about your work that maybe makes you say, oh, this kind of feels like, this makes me feel like a man. Is there anything in there?
Not really. Yeah. I don't think of any masculine aspects. You know, it's funny. If anything, I'm dealing with like most of our customers mm-hmm. are ladies.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting. And obviously we get the occasional
and I'm even
husband
talking
tagging
like,
along.
And I'm even talking like certain successes or certain things that make you feel good that maybe access your masculinity a little bit. Because, you know, like everyone, you and I both have feminine and masculine energy within
right,
us.
Right.
And there's kind of like a balance maybe, you know, of, you know, we try to balance it out, but sometimes it goes either way. But is there anything that within work for you that touches your masculine energy?
You know, it's funny because creativity, like the creative side of it
yeah.
comes out, but I don't think that's, you know, should be categorized into the masculine side of
right,
me.
Right, for sure. Well, everyone. Yeah. I mean, everyone. Can
obviously.
Have, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I don't know. That's just.
No, it's something.
It may give me that feeling, you know,
yeah.
of like getting into the jewelry lab and actually getting to like do some more custom
maybe
stones,
working with your hands,
do some metals.
That,
yeah, yeah, yep, that could be
yeah
more than like the thought process of it, the thought aspect. But
no,
yeah, it's the hands on.
I mean, I kind of like that because why does work need to even stroke that masculine energy
right,
at all?
Right.
I don't know. I feel like for me at least, I don't know what exactly makes me feel like masculine. I don't know. I don't even know. Like, work doesn't. Success at work doesn't.
Right, right.
And it's hard to even, sometimes it's hard to even define, because if we're working from a definition that's of masculinity, that's not so, that makes me uncomfortable, like this macho bravado, like right. working, oh, I work 12 hours a day. That makes me feel like a man. No, that's like, you're an idiot. You're working too much.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I mean? And I don't feel good when I do that. I don't feel good when I work like 14 days in a row. That doesn't make me feel empowered as a man at all.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, you know.
See, and that's the aspect of me working in the shop, but it's like, you know, we're remodeling the house behind the building right now. So sure. I get out there and get dirty, you know, put on my construction clothes and yeah. we end up doing stuff like that. And,
yeah.
you know, obviously that probably does lend to, you know, that aspect of that.
Sure.
You know, masculine, you know, get out there
okay.
and get a hammer in your hands and shovel, you know, so.
And I'm definitely not saying, like, I think we should, men should find ways to access our masculinity in healthy ways.
Right.
Like, I don't know what that looks like. Like, how is it okay that to be a man? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
how is it okay? What can we do?
See, and I've never really put much thought into this, so it's really interesting,
it's,
actually,
well,
that you're
asking. Well, it's interesting to dive into it, because, like, I'm always wondering what it is, what's appropriate for me to do that makes me feel like a man.
Right.
And I'm not saying, like, oh, we should be able to treat women like shit. No, that's the opposite. Like, that's ridiculous.
Right.
I already... I'm super sensitive around women, as I should be, but I mean, like, or around any human, it's
right,
not just
yeah.
women. I'm kind of going yep. down a path where I'm getting in trouble here, but like, I'm not saying we should be treating people as other to make me feel like a man. That's not what I'm saying,
right,
but
right.
I'm trying to say, like,
what are those actions?
Is it okay for me to chop wood and feel like a man?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
is that a healthy way to do
yeah.
it?
Like, what if you chop wood and you don't feel like a man? Like, what is that?
Exactly. exactly. I don't have any interest in chopping wood, to be honest with you, but like,
yeah.
So, you know, that's part of the struggle, too, is where I'm not interested in most of those things.
See, and it's, yeah, same, but it's like I would go chop wood if I had to. But
sure,
it, you
if
know.
I had to, right?
Like, but yeah, I wouldn't do it with the intention of, oh, this might make me feel like a man, or
right.
how do I feel after? I just chopped the wood because I had to do it, you know,
sure.
and don't put any more thought into it. But.
And so I guess, like, I don't know what to do. Do I have? Do we have to? Do we even have to try to feel like a man?
I don't think so. I mean, until you asked me that, that would have been my answer. Well, I've never even put thought into
it. Well, your answer is clearly that you haven't put thought into it. And I think that's a positive thing. I asked, like, you know, what does work do for you to make you feel like a man? You're like, I'm fucking nothing.
Right.
Nothing. It doesn't matter.
It's funny. My more concern is, what am I doing to be like a contributing member of society?
Yeah.
Like, more than like trying to be masculine or, you know, so
right.
that's my concern and my... Am I doing something every day, you know, that's...
Yeah, and do you think, what do you think, so do you think that means that you need to have both your feminine and masculine balanced to really contribute and make sure everyone's included, or what does that look like internally for you?
I think that's healthy, you know, I think it's healthy to
yeah.
have, like, both in balance, and I, you know, I really think most people do have a balance of that. I think they're afraid to show it, you know.
I think men...
Men, yeah, yeah.
I think men are afraid to admit their feminine side.
Right.
Dude, you
they'll go out of their way to like...
Dude, you work in jewelry.
Exactly.
Yep. you
yep.
know what I mean?
Yep.
So I would say that could be considered very feminine.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That was kind of my point is, you know, most people I'm dealing with are women, 90%
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
And then obviously it's funny, we have our big section of like minerals and crystals and stuff too. So then we, you know, that side is more of like, for whatever reason... there's usually a lot more guys that are into that type of stuff.
Right.
And we get plenty of ladies as well that are, you know, crystals are awesome. So.
And I'm wondering, right. Exactly. Yeah. Those guys.
But it is funny that it's usually guys.
Sure.
And then women are always looking at the jewelry. So.
Huh. That's interesting. And it's what I'm thinking about right now too, is like when we're talking about balancing feminine and masculine energy, I don't think it's a 50-50 thing.
Right.
Cause I think,
it's more of a situational thing.
What's more, yeah, it's like situational, but also that like for those to really keep you in balance, I think it's healthier for your feminine to be a little bit elevated over your masculine, just
because
right. the masculine can be so strong and so toxic in a way that's like, you know what I mean? More like a 60-40 is probably a better balance.
Yeah,
for the, like what you said, like I'm on team human. I'm
yeah.
on team society as opposed to team man.
Just
or
be
team.
A person, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. These dogs, man. These dogs want in on this conversation. We have a female dog. We have a male dog here.
Wondering what's going on.
Wonder what's going on. But, so you're in Tucson, and we had, so what else were you doing at the time? Because this is where we start to go off the rails just a bit with life, right?
Right. Yeah. Oh man. It's, you know, it's funny to even think back about, you know, I remember just almost still having that kid mentality where, you know, I didn't let things bother me. I was pretty much just living a happy life, you know, doing what, you know, I had no aspirations or what I wanted to do in 10 years from now, basically at that time. So just, yeah, it's funny. Like that those few years were just all kind of a, not a blur, but they all just kind of, it all just kind of ran together for a few years after high school. And
just, you know, going through the motions.
Yeah. Yeah. It was basically just waking up, go to work every day, and then come home, hang out with my friends. You know, it was just pretty boring, really. I mean, do the same thing the next day, and then I'd fly out, you know, for the occasional show every month or two, and, you know, that runs for the weekend. So that's really not a very fulfilling or satisfying life, but at the time it was good. You know, it's what I needed at the time.
Were you bored at all?
No. Yeah, not at all.
No.
Okay. I had so many good people around me, you know.
Right. Right.
It was always fun. Everything was relaxed. And
so it was around, I guess, this time that we didn't really talk much after that, even in on the phone. We didn't really text much. This was like 2004 and 2005 is when we, you know, we for several years there.
Right.
And then eventually after several years, I came back and somebody was like, yeah, you know, Tommy's in rehab. Because he was on heroin.
Right.
I'm like, whoa. That fucking blew my mind.
Super shock, yeah.
Well, it was a super shock. I mean, if you listen to the first part of this episode, you kind of hear our backstory and just growing up together and being so close. And we felt like I just about knew everything about Tommy that I needed. You know, we just were super close. And then when you hear that, when I hear that, it was like shocking. It scared me. It was like, what the fuck, man?
Yeah, did I hear that right?
And I don't know, man. Like, so what kind of started you down that path?
You know, it was, you know, obviously I had like started smoking weed and, you know, enjoying that. It was obviously just the recreational fun party aspect of it, you know, get around with friends and laugh and have a good time and go get some food, you know, stuff like that. Typical. But you know, I was kind of explaining this earlier. It's funny as like kids, we were always, they always categorized everything in the same bubble, you know, whether it was marijuana, cocaine, heroin, meth, it was all bad. It was all drugs. It's all dope. Don't do it. So, you know, I think when I first smoked weed for the first time, I realized, like, you know, what's the big deal? This isn't so bad. Like, this isn't so crazy. You know, what was all the commotion about? So, you know, in my mind, I kind of thought, okay, you know, if they said this was so bad all those years and I tried it and it's not, then, you know, what's cocaine like? What's heroin like? You know, and I feel like it was just kind of, people were uneducated from our generation as far as.
Yeah, I think.
You can't just say they're all bad. They are bad, but some have way more dangers than others, you know, as far as the physical addiction aspect, which I couldn't have even comprehended at that time. I had no idea. You know, you use something for a few weeks and then you're going to have a hard time getting off of it, you know, which just lack of education, I think, at that time.
We just revealed something really important about drug education. I mean, cannabis and heroin are not the same.
No, they
are not even close to the same.
But it's funny in the 90s, like, and,
but
ads are like
what we were taught, it's like, was, it's like, hey, these are drugs. These are both equally as bad. And so what happened was, once you do a drug like cannabis that is not dangerous, it's more of an herb and a medicine.
Right.
Once you do one and you realize how not dangerous it is, but then you were taught that it's the same as heroin, all of a sudden heroin's not dangerous.
Right, yeah.
Oh, whoops. Heroin's fucking way really dangerous.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of where you were with that.
Definitely. Yeah. So it's just a lack of realizing the significant differences between all these different drugs.
And based on a shitty education system that we had about it.
And, you know, in most of the stuff that we would see on TV, it was like, at the end of Saved by the Bell. You remember that type of thing?
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, Down with Dope. Like, you know, they were just little clippets. It's not like they ever really, even in school, they never really educated you on.
It was just these constant little messages and pokes and reminders. And Down with Dope, Up with Hope.
But it's, you know, had they categorized maybe marijuana and alcohol in the same category and, you know, meth and heroin and coke and whatever, you know, in the more hardcore, dangerous categories, then maybe I would have known a little bit better as well.
Sure.
Because for me, it was almost like, you know, started out with like pills like Percocet or something, you know, that I got from some guy in school. And, you know, it was just a minor thing. Did it. Went a few weeks, whatever, you know, didn't feel the urge to do it again. And then it just kind of worked its way up. And I had a good friend of mine that kind of started getting into more serious stuff. And I guess that was the first time that I noticed one day, you know, he's just a good friend. I'd known him for a long time, but I noticed one day that he was really anxious about trying to get like some Oxycontin or Percocet, whatever he was trying to get that day. And when his, you know, he couldn't get a hold of his guy, basically, I was like, well, whatever, dude, let's just go to the mall. Let's go to the movie. And he couldn't let it go. You know, he was so locked in on, I have to get something. Cause
like anxious, so, pacing.
Yeah.
Like, like manic almost.
Sweating. Yep. That was his entire focus, was locked in on that. And I couldn't even quite comprehend it at
that
time.
What's going through your mind when you're seeing that though? Like,
I couldn't understand.
Cause you had done it by then. You said you had done at least versions of it.
Yeah. I had like, you know, I tried a little bit of an Oxycontin once. Yeah. I had done Percocet a couple times. And
so that wasn't a red flag to you at all? Like,
no, because I still didn't get the physical addiction. I didn't understand that his body was like out of whack and he was feeling it. You know, he was sweating and, you know, probably had the cold sweats and body aches and whatever comes along with that. So I couldn't comprehend it, even if he explained it to me, which he didn't say anything, you know, like, oh, I'm not feeling good. But I could see he wasn't himself, and that was probably the first time that I've ever seen him that way, you know. So it clicked that something was up, but it still didn't quite take, you know, I didn't realize probably for at least a month or two after, when he probably got even worse and worse, you know. But it's not until you start using, you know, which is pretty much what I did. He came over like with some opium or black tar heroin, and we ended up smoking that. And
I'm pretty ignorant to like, what's the difference between black tar heroin and just straight up? I don't know. I'm so ignorant to it.
Nothing really. I mean, you know, you can shoot that up as well. People will do that. They cook that up and shoot it, you know, but you can also
just
smoke
it. You said you were just smoking
it. Yeah.
You only smoked it.
Only smoked it. That was all I ever did. But you know, it only took a week or two, and then you running out. And then you realize that feeling of like, I don't feel good this morning. You know, what is that feeling? You don't even know what it is. You know, it's like
when in that feeling that you have when you run out and you that moment of realization, what's going through your body and your mind at the time? Is it panic? Is it that mania? Is it the like, I need it now?
Yeah, confusion too, because you really don't even quite make the connection that. I mean, you wake up and you just kind of start feeling sick. You know, you feel like you've got a cold coming on or the flu coming on. Your body aches, kind of feel the sweats, your nose is running, your eyes are watery. So it's really hard to discern the difference really between some type of bug coming on or if you're just
withdrawing,
from not having that drug in your system. So I didn't even realize that, I don't think, like the first time that it happened. And
so you're not sensing in danger and using it at this point then, right? You're just thinking, oh, I'm just sick maybe, or you don't sense a danger like, oh, maybe this is dangerous.
No. But it's like, you know, I'd already been using it about a week.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I just didn't make that connection. Not fully, you know, and I don't know, maybe I was ignorant, but maybe I didn't want to see that connection.
Maybe probably the second, the latter.
Yeah, that could be. Because I was going to say, you know, I definitely had the intention of, well, I did it this last week and it was great.
Yeah.
So why I'm probably going to wake up and get more today.
Why not feel good this week too?
Yeah. And I think it was when I went to go get some and it took all those symptoms away, you know, that I realized that's what it was.
Okay.
But that whole morning beforehand, it was just kind of, oh, I don't feel good. You know, I think I'm coming down with something. And then we go get it and it's just like, you know, cures you, makes you feel normal again, basically.
Mm-hmm. And you're still holding down your job at this point.
Yeah.
Holding down the relationship. Is Danielle doing that with you?
Well, she was going to school full time.
Oh, so she wasn't.
And she was in a really, she was in their architecture program, which is really difficult at the university there. That's, I mean, she was in a class of a few hundred, which then got narrowed down to about 10 people. And she was one of them. So it was really hard to even get into that program. Yeah. And yeah, and she was right there with me. So basically, you know, same timeline and storyline as me. We kind of did it on the same days, kind of ended up in the same boat. So basically, once we realized, you know, a week or two in that we need this stuff basically at this point just to be normal every day, that was that point where we realized it's, we screwed up. Yeah. But, you know, it's not as easy as just going cold turkey and like not going to work every day. So that was your job.
That was your reckoning moment.
Yeah. Yep. And it's so hard to reach out to like family or friends.
You know, dude, like asking for help is really hard.
It is.
And for anyone, and as a man, like we're not really like rewarded or seen as, it's not seen as a positive for a man to ask for help.
Well, and the only people you can really ask for help are your true friends and family.
True friends,
the ones
and
you
family.
Know you're going to disappoint by just, and obviously, you know, I know now that your friends and family would rather you speak up and ask for help.
Right.
You know, but my whole focus was how I'm going to disappoint these people when sure. I tell them this, you know.
Did you feel like a pull to like, no, I'm going to man up and do this myself. Like I can do this myself. I don't need their help.
Yes and no. You know, I mean, I had like spurts of that where like, yeah, I'm going to wean down to where it's like not so bad and then just go off cold turkey and, you know. Yeah. And, you know, it always sounds good at the time. And then, you know, you might even do well for a few weeks and then it just takes once of like, you know, wanting to get higher again, you know, so you do it or you do more or whatever. Uh-huh. So it's just one of those like perpetual cycles where you just like can't get out of it.
Yeah. So I'm also thinking, so we can kind of, we'll make sure we get back to this. So this is your point of reckoning now. You're kind of like, okay, I need help. This is, I'm in danger now.
Yeah. Well, but, that went on for a couple of years.
Before went on years.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, a couple of years. And you know, it wasn't.
So timeline wise, like I said, you graduated 2004 from high school. I graduated 2005. So.
And right after high school is about when we got
about
into
when you
that.
Started.
Yeah.
So 2004, 2005. And then when did it, when was the, you say you had that moment of reckoning where you're like danger zone, but then it went on a few more years. So what was the few more years? What year does that put us at the end of it?
By the end of it was probably, let's see. So I must have started 04 and then probably was pretty much fully clean by 07.
Okay.
And you know, there were periods in there where, you know, there was a time where I did quit cold turkey for about a month or so.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't there mentally yet. Like, it was like I did do it, but I still wanted it. You know, it was almost like I was forced into quitting. And,
you hadn't really
resolved.
You hadn't really resolved to quit.
Yeah, exactly.
So put a pin in that there. That takes us to 2007. I'm wondering about your relationship with Danielle. And specifically, like, how did you view a relationship when you first entered that relationship? Like, what was your view on where your position within the relationship was as a man and where, what her role was? Did you have any sense of that at the time?
Not really. You know, we started
dating in high school, right?
Yeah. Yep. Senior year. And, you know, she'd always kind of, she was one of the girls that hung out with the guys. Like she was always in our group and around. And so it's funny, we hung out a lot before anything ever transpired and we, you know, got together into a relationship. But it was almost, you know, it started out, she was just one of the guys, like, you know, like one of my best friends, basically.
Yeah.
So.
A few dick jokes here and there. Nothing.
Yeah. Yep. But, you know, she was just like my other half. I mean, that was the way I viewed her, was the best thing that ever happened to me at that point.
Yeah.
You know, I'd never experienced that type of happiness that somebody else could give me. And
you think, do you think men are a little more prone to that? That, this person is the best thing to ever happen to me?
I don't know. Not me, because to this point in my life, she's the only thing I've ever felt like that.
Yeah.
So it's not like any of my other relationships felt like that.
Yeah.
You know, there's some attraction and different, you know.
Because I recently read a thing, I think I told you this, where men pretty much make up their mind about the potential of another partner after 3 or 4
right,
days.
Right.
Like it's either a yes or a no. And men can just be like, they're either all in or it's like, nope, not going to work. And it only takes 3 or 4 dates.
Right. And yeah,
whereas women,
funny.
Whereas women like take 3 or 4 weeks or a month.
It could be that their men are a little bit more shallow. So they're basing it off of like one thing someone says or their looks or their whatever.
Yeah, I wondered about that though, because for me, I don't know, like I wonder if it's this too, where, and this, I'm not saying this is a positive,
right?
But like we're so easily pleased.
Yeah.
Like it's pretty simple. And I'm not just talking about physical connection or anything like that,
right.
But we're just like, yeah, that's good. I feel good about that.
Right.
We'll go with that. You know what I mean? It's just interesting how men and women connect.
The thought process difference.
Yeah, the thought process.
That's true.
But so you didn't really, so she just felt different to you.
Yeah. Yep. That was just, it felt so easy. I don't know. We just made that instant connection. So
it's instant connection. It felt easy when it started. And then, so you both start doing heroin.
About really a year after we got together.
Okay. So and how did things change after that?
You know, this is a large part of why the whole thing even started too, though. She'd had a big surgery, and you know, had like a couple days of pain medication, and afterwards was still in a lot of pain, you know, and she tried contacting the doctors going in and they basically wouldn't help her. So, you know, not to make an excuse, but it's almost where it started. That was when our buddy that happened to be over offered, you know, some what he called at the time opium, which obviously we know better now. Well, it's not just like straight up old time opium. It was heroin.
Got,
you know,
from a field. And
yeah. And he's like, oh, if you just like, you know, take a little hit, it'll make you feel a lot better. And it did, you know.
Yeah.
But so it's really interesting because she, I think, was the one that actually fiend for it a little bit more, you know, like once we started that.
Yeah, her hook was actually to relieve a pain.
Yeah, yeah.
Surgery.
But then, you know, within a few weeks.
Yeah,
then it was kind of her more.
Yeah.
And it's really easy to, you know, when someone else is going, oh, I want more, you know, we should get some more today, just to say, yeah, okay. You know, it's just kind of like.
Well, especially too, when you're saying you felt differently about her, like she was your other half.
Right,
of
right.
course you're gonna like support her and jump in there on that, right?
And we were just so naive too.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we just still kids, just couldn't man. Comprehend like what type of addiction we were getting ourselves into.
18-19 year old kids.
Yeah. Yep. Right. So it was just, you know, a learning experience. You know, we just didn't have enough education beforehand, and before you know it, it's too late. So it's, you know, to sum it up like quickly, that's how it happened with us.
Yeah. And so do you think that experience with her, do you think that changed your, or how did that change your view on relationships moving forward?
You know, it's funny because I think we became a lot closer after that, because we realized that we're both in this together.
After you walk through hell with somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. And it was like, all we desperately wanted was for each other to be okay and happy, and like, you know,
yeah.
We were more concerned with the other than we were ourselves, and so we had the right intentions.
Which there's a balance to that, right? I mean, you got to love yourself and take care of yourself, and so you can take care and love the other person.
Yeah, yep.
It's tough.
So, you know, yeah, it's funny. It came to a certain point where, you know, she ended up going home. And it was kind of like the last straw here, you know, it was like we hit a...
So we're back to 2007 now, right?
Yeah, well, let's see here.
Circling back up to the...
2006, 2007, after about a year, year and a half, yeah. I mean, a year and a half to 2 years, we both actually got clean. Let's see, her mom flew up.
So at this point, you guys had asked for help.
We had, yeah.
Somebody
We ran out of... We lost our connection, moved away, so we just pretty much... So I had to suffer through withdrawals and...
Oh, my God.
Okay, so basically what happened, yeah, we called our guy one day, and he's like, I'm on my way to California, and I'm not coming back. So that kind of threw us into a panic a little bit. And, you know, I could always kind of suffer through the withdrawals cold turkey. Like, I feel like I was psychologically strong enough to, like, weather through it, but she wasn't. So about 10 hours, 12 hours into it, she ended up calling 911 because she needed to go to the hospital. She just couldn't handle it. So, you know, paramedics show up, police show up, help her out, get her into the ambulance. And obviously the cop starts questioning me about, you know, what happened? What did you guys do? He was fairly nice about it. Although he did see like a pipe there and wrote me a ticket for weed.
He knew. Oh, did he?
Yeah. On top of like the crappy day he knew I was having.
You're just like, thank you?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was actually her that had it out, trying to like just get some relief.
Yeah.
And, you know, when he asked whose it was, I was like, it's mine. Like, you know, he wrote me a ticket. Well, whatever it was.
Who fucking cares?
That's, yeah, yeah. And so that's where it started. Like, she ended up going to the hospital. They, you know, got her on drugs to make it easier. And then her mom ended up flying home. And after a few days, taking her back to Tucson to get into, like, a outpatient. Actually, it was an inpatient type program where she's in a facility for so many days being detoxed, you know, with the help of different drugs just to ease her symptoms and stuff. The way that she put it, she basically slept through 3 days of like the worst withdrawal, you know? So basically when she left, I got onto a program for Suboxone, which is a buprenorphine. It's like a maintenance drug, basically. It's not an opiate. It's an opioid, or it's a opiate receptor antagonist. So it basically fills the receptors in your head with what it thinks are opiates. And then it also blocks
more to come in,
any actual opiates. Yeah. So it gives you that. It makes you feel better, but it'll take that desire to use away. And it will also take the ability for you to use away. Because even if I were to have smoked, the receptors are already taken up. They'll just bypass it. You know, you won't get any of that high from it.
Yeah.
So I did that for almost 2 years. I was on that program, and you know, I've read a lot of people that are advocates for it, and I've also read a lot of people that are saying, "Oh, you're just trading off. You know, you're just trading off your life." But you know, if you do it right, if you have the right intentions, if you got the right doctor to help you along the way, it really is a great program. There's not a lot of options out there outside of that and methadone. And methadone, I do feel like it can be abused. You can really get just as high on that as you can, you know, any prescription medicine or anything like that. So for me, you know, I went through that whole 2-year program and weaned off at the end and had no issues. It was very, very easy and just happy at that point that I had done it and like I'm free from this.
Yeah.
But, you know, that worked out great for me and great for her as well. So that was kind of the short and probably boring story of, you know, happened.
Thanks for sharing.
No problem.
It's a lot. I mean, like, but then what happens to your relationship after that? I mean, you walk through hell with each other, but then you come out the other end. And do you even have a definition of what your relationship is at that point?
You know, we did. It was really tough. We still loved each other to death. Like, you know, we were still each other's other half. Like,
yeah.
But it was really hard for her to leave all of her family in Tucson and to go through this whole thing. She felt like my parents probably just hated her, you know? Yeah. I mean, she couldn't like face it anymore.
Sure.
It was easier for her and hard, obviously, at the same time to just not come back. And, you know, part of that was that she just needed to be around her family, and it's, you know, 1,700 miles away. So
yeah,
it kind of just is what it is. You know, it happened that way that, you know, I don't know, if she had come back up here, it might've just triggered that sadness and depression of what she associated
and
with.
And then seeking pain relief.
Yeah. All she knew of like moving up to Washington was basically addiction and withdrawal, you know?
That's understandable.
So,
and so at this point we're at like 2009.
Yep. Well, actually 2008. And then that's pretty much when we called it quits, okay. You know? Kind of moved on.
So you had a whole stretch here where you're like, you're, you know, into heroin and then you're rehabbing.
Right.
So how are you even thinking about developing as a human at that point?
Right. You
or
know,
even thinking about being like, what does it mean to be a man? Where's my place in this world? Like,
nope. What do I want to do?
What's happening in your head in that regard during this whole stretch? Like, this is like, we're talking like a 4 or 5 year stretch here where,
right.
And in a very important point in development, right? In your development, when you're that young and kind of forming yourself.
Yep, definitely.
So, I mean, what's...
You know, most of it...
Are you even thinking about any of that during the time?
Not really. No, I was not like really an analyzer. I wasn't very, you know, like I wasn't thinking about the psychology behind it. And, you know, I was ignorantly blissful, you know, just like that whole situation was, you know, I was happy for most of it. It was like a great time, having a good time, whatever. But it wasn't until like the last year, year and a half, like when, you know, that we started to try to get off of it and things, you know, fell apart, lose our guy, all that. I mean, once it went downhill, that's obviously when it just like all fell to pieces, basically. But you know, for the most part, I was still just blissfully living life and enjoying it. And, you know, it bothered me in the back of my mind that I knew I had an issue that I had to deal with at some point. But, you know, it wasn't until this whole thing was said and done with and I was clean that I really became more aware of my thoughts and myself and like just had that deep down look inside me, you know, started figuring myself out a little bit more and who am I and why did I do this and, you know, where did it lead me?
And so I think, you know, observationally, I saw you pretty close to after you were clean.
Right.
And you were the same old guy to me.
Right, right.
But
Personality-wise,
yeah, that's what I mean. You were still Tommy. You're still the kid that we would camp up, you know, I would camp with overnight. We'd stay up all night playing video games, trying to beat one damn game that kept resetting on us. Like, you were still that guy, but there was this extra layer to you of introspection.
Right, right.
And it's crazy. Like, I'm thinking, I wonder, you know, you could say that maybe your growth as a man or human was stunted because of that stretch where you're on heroin and you're recovering.
And just living in this own little
suspended state of...
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Floating. But then again, like, without that experience, do you think you would have become the introspective person that you were?
No, I don't think so. Because I got way more into, like, how it affected my brain and how my brain works. And not even just drugs, but, I mean, outside of that, it drew me into this interest of...
And I don't think it's common when you were, like, 22 at the time.
Right.
Not common for a 22-year-old to start diving into that sort of thing.
Right, yep.
Maybe a little. Like, I was more that way just because of...
Something has to trigger that,
right?
That interest.
I mean, for me, it was just I was always interested in intellectual pursuits, and I'm not holding that as like a look at me. It's not a badge of honor, but it was just, you know, how my dad raised me, and he was always spiritual and about introspection and, you know, quote unquote self help. So I was always interested in those things. So, but it's not rare for a 22-year-old to be in that space,
right? Right.
So even sitting here, like talking this out a little bit, like, I don't know, do you think you would have become the person you are now or the man you are now without that experience?
No, definitely not. I think I would be a totally different person. Still have like those base, you know, the base of my personality, but yeah. No, I would be definitely...
Not as introspective.
No.
Because what would have triggered it?
I mean...
You know, like... And you don't know. I guess you can't answer that question for sure, but...
You know, and after I got done, you know, I was clean and, you know, me and... You know, my girl weren't together anymore. You know, the hardest part of it afterwards was not being clean and wanting to use again. It was the fact that I had lost her. You know, that was like, it took me a long time to get over that. Years afterwards.
What kind of things were you feeling about that?
Just like, this depression, this happiness that I lost, this little piece of me, you know, that was my other half. You know, it was so great for so many years, and then just to have that taken away. And then, you know, it's so hard to find, you know, and people say, oh, there's plenty of fishes out there in the sea, but it's to have that type of connection with somebody else is really...
Yeah, we've been talking about this a little bit over the last week where it's so hard to define romance. It's so hard to define that spark.
Yep.
Like, you know, I've been on some dates where it's like,
I don't even think of like romance. Like, not even, I think maybe, romance was an aspect, but the connection.
Yeah, the connection, that spark. I mean, that maybe that spark that leads to a romance.
Yeah,
but
yep.
Like, I've been on some dates where it's like just lovely people that I connected with. We had a lot in common.
Right.
Like, we shared things. We could laugh and have fun. But at the same time, like, I'm like, well, I just don't feel a spark.
Right.
And I don't really like, it's odd because we can have so much in common.
Right.
We can share things openly, but it's just like there's just something not here. Yet, when you get that spark,
right?
Yep. When you can almost, you know, nowadays you can read.
It's basically, they're just a friend. They just lack that attraction.
But it's hard to even pinpoint what that is.
Right.
It's not. I mean, yes, you say attraction, but I'm not even thinking physical.
Right. Right. Yeah, not physical, but I mean,
some of that, there is some of that, right?
But, right.
You know, now when you feel that spark, you instantly know what it is.
Right.
You're just like, you know, you can read nowadays you read a dating profile or something. Some of the more longer, the longer ones where they have to write more and you're like, holy shit, this person, I have to meet this person.
Right. Yeah.
And then you meet them and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah. You pick up on those little.
Oh my God.
The things that you're looking for, the things that click with you.
And I don't know what it is, not one thing. It's just right. Like this collection of things. So, yeah, I mean, I agree where it's like plenty of fish in the sea, sure, but there's only a few of those that really make a spark for
you. Yeah. And, you know, and I think for me, having found someone like that, that early in my life, I'll never settle. You know what I mean? Like after experiencing that, like... If I'm 40, like I won't. It's funny. And I was talking to another friend about this, and he was like, "Dude, you're a braver man than I, because I would have settled just so I could like have kids and a family."
Sure.
He's like, you know, sacrificed his happiness like for like who he married.
Wow.
And he said that, and I was like, "Dang, like that is crazy," because I would not even would not even come across my mind. That's not going to happen. I would rather spend my life alone than settle. You know, like I just feel like that.
Well,
you're selling yourself short.
I'm the same way, where I'm not settling for anything less than a person that makes me feel like they're going to expand my potential.
Right.
Not even complete. I don't want to be completed. I don't think a person is ever going to complete me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm looking for a person that's going to help me expand my own potential and see more, like, help me see more in myself.
Right.
And it's an interesting question I thought of when you were saying that is, would you rather be alone... Which doesn't necessarily mean lonely, but would you rather be alone for the rest of your life or settle and be in a relationship?
I'd rather be alone.
Yeah.
That's just me. And, you know, it's only because I know what's possible. You mean, I've experienced, you know, and I think that's what defines settling.
Yeah.
You know what it's capable, you know what a good connection is capable of, you know?
Right.
So.
That's a hard thing to wrap your head around a little bit, because I know you want to have a family probably, and you don't necessarily want to be alone, but
yeah,
at the same time you got to be.
I also don't want to end up in a relationship where we have kids and I get a divorce, and it's matter of like, you know, and I know that's
only
like
you
something.
Being fair though to the other person,
right?
And yourself, right?
Yeah. Yep.
You don't want to just settle and get yourself into kids.
Yeah,
you're like, wait a minute, that's not smart. You don't want to, you know, make other humans and then make them miserable too.
Right. Yeah. Just having experienced that feeling, you know, I know it's out there. So yeah, I guess in the end, I won't settle for anything less than that feeling.
Right. And it's not for me too. It's not even, I'm not looking for perfection.
Right.
I'm not looking for a perfect person.
Yeah.
Or even, I don't even know what it would mean for a perfect person for me. I don't know what that looks like necessarily, but it's just more of that spark we were talking about. That's hard to.
Yep. When you know, you know.
That spark that leads to a romance that leads to somebody making you feel like
you a million bucks.
Yeah. And just you could conquer the fucking world. And not even person to like, I don't even want to be with a person who's going to fix me. Like, nobody's going to fix me.
Right.
That's on me. That's on me to fix my insecurities and stuff like that.
Yep.
Do you think, what do you think that, see, to me, like you say that sort of thing. And that's like, in my opinion, like the most manly thing you could say. Like, I don't know. It's just really, to me, how do you define a man? How do you define what a man is?
Gosh, you know, that's male anatomy. That's about it. And that's just me. You know, I think I'm different than most people, but I don't really get caught up in what a guy should be, what a girl should be, you know.
Well, not even what they should be, but what do you view as like a healthy masculine state? Like, I mean, yeah, we do have different, I mean, gender roles are hard, right? It's hard to even talk about or hard to.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, I feel like there's a, it's easier, you know, I don't know. It's weird. Cause I don't think it's a gender thing. You know, when it comes to happiness or what a person's role should be, and it's, I don't know. That's a really odd question. I feel like you're going to end up with the same attributes, you know, as far as, you know, being a hard worker, having a 9-to-5, like being motivated, having an output for, you know, your creative side, or having a balance in your life of work and play. Mm. I don't put as much thought into what a man should be, what a woman should be. You know, I feel like they're basically the same. Sure. You know, they've got the same desires, they've got the same, you know, passions, and I mean, it's just, it's human to me, you know? So right. For me to try to differentiate between genders is really something I've never put thought into.
Right. Well, when you were describing, you know, whether or not you'd rather be alone or settle, what I'm also hearing you say in that is that you want to make sure that you're 100% present for your partner.
Yeah.
Like you're 100% in, present, and there for her.
For sure. Yep.
And I think when we start to kind of redefine what masculinity is, you know, I think it does need a bit of a redefining, right?
Right.
It's because it's, you know, creating problems all over the place. But I think that's a good starting place.
Right.
It's just being present for women and for ourselves, and just, you know, and that means emotionally present and vulnerable and open and physically there, all of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look back at your, when we were talking about your dad and we're talking about my dad, they were present.
Right.
You know, you, like you said, you'd always give your dad a hug and a kiss goodnight or whatever. When you were leaving, you always did. He was always present. You know, yeah, he was on the road for work every so often, but he'd always come back and be there for you guys and do, you know, have fun road trips to Oregon. And he'd always be present.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I mean, we're not going to solve what a man is in one conversation. But I think what I'm starting to learn from, you know, the previous men too, is that's like, that's one thing. That's just one thing that we should look at, is just men who are present.
Right. It's interesting that you've asked me this, because I'll think about it more after, you know, after we're all said and done.
Well, I'm the same way with that sort of stuff. It's like, give me a day to think about that.
But it's like, I've never really ever tried to think about the differences. I see people as people, and I don't know if I'm unique that way, but I really don't look much into it as far as like trying to look for that guy's masculine, you know, qualities, or that girl's feminine qualities. You know, it's really weird. And even like where I analyze a lot of things, and I love the psychological aspect of, you know, of a lot of those things, but I've really not a thought about that. Never thought about gender and what I think should be, you know, and shouldn't be. So,
well, I think it's hard for you and I, or guys like us, we're not comfortable with those differences, like that they exist. But, you know, traditional society and upbringing, if you go back to our grandparents and stuff like that, and, you know, this kind of gets into that thing, women just got the right to vote not that long ago.
Right.
60 years ago or something, the 1940s, or I don't know, speaking way.
It's so crazy.
And that's crazy. But clearly these differences do exist. And they exist at very high levels in business. They exist in very high levels in...
I think that some men excel at certain things that women wouldn't. And I think women excel at certain things that men wouldn't. But I think the underlying, I think on this, you know, when you get down to it, a lot of their wants and desires and like stuff like that are the same.
But why are men excelling at certain things that women aren't? And why, you know, vice versa, why?
Right. Well, some are easy, you know, if it comes to construction or like stuff where you need like a more upper body strength. I mean, stuff like that, then it's clear that typically most men are probably going to be, you know,
I mean, on average.
Yeah. They're a little bit more built for physiologically, type of labor.
Yeah. They're just built for that type of labor.
Yep.
And it's not to say that women aren't capable of being very effective construction workers.
Right. Right.
It's just that. Yeah, I understand. I'm on team.
Just that brute, like, force. You know what I mean?
I'm on team biology. I understand biological differences, but I'm not taking away from women's ability to do things that men can do.
Right, right.
But I think the problem becomes that then women aren't encouraged to be construction workers if they want to be.
Right.
And that's where we start getting into sticky situations where it does start to become a problem with feminine and masculine, right?
Yeah.
Because now construction is labeled as a masculine job.
Right.
And then women aren't encouraged to do it.
And, you know, it's funny because a lot of construction doesn't even really... There's not a lot of hard labor out there. I mean, they're usually using machinery and equipment.
Sure.
And anybody can learn
anybody
to use
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even, you know, you start looking at now, let's go into science and math. How many little girls are encouraged to go into science and math?
Right, right. I think it's better today than when we were kids.
100% better.
And you know, it's funny. It's when we were kids, it was interesting because it wasn't that, like, any of the teachers discouraged, like, you know, the girls in the class to, like, not go towards these things. But it, for some reason, there was just kind of this underlying, I don't know, it was a really weird vibe, I guess, right. When we were in school that there were still those thoughts in place that women don't do this and guys don't do this. And, like, why? You know, that was really discussed.
And I mean, just, like, a tomboy.
It was a society thing.
A quote-unquote tomboy wasn't looked at in a positive light.
Right,
you know what I mean? And it's just...
Yeah, well, it's like if we had a girl on our baseball team, you know. Not that, like, you know, any of us were mean or anything. We were fine, you know. But I'm sure she felt...
She probably felt other. She probably...
Yeah.
You know, she probably felt that she was different, which... That's the problem, right? Shouldn't feel like she's different. She's just fucking playing baseball.
Right.
She's just doing what she likes to do. And I think that's where the, like, again, we don't like seeing those differences. We don't understand why people do that, but they do exist.
Right. But, you know, it's funny because there were those kids on our team, the boys. And, you know, I don't know what their backgrounds were. They were single father, single mother. Who knows what their parent situation was. But some of them were the jerks that, you know, I don't want to play with a girl, you know.
Where do you think that comes from?
It had to stem from something else, you know, something, obviously, it's something they were taught.
I mean, is
you know?
Some of it's pop culture a little bit?
Yep, could be pop culture.
I mean, one of our, think about one of our favorite movies growing up, Sandlot.
Yeah.
Yep. What's one of the lines from Sandlot? You play ball like a girl.
Yeah.
They, you know, they use it as an insult.
That's been a long one, you throw like a girl, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. That's just, you're right, it's probably in pop culture and... Sometimes it's the parents too,
which is crazy for me to think.
Like I had a few friends that their dads were hard asses. You know, they were the type that, although whether they had a boy or a son or a daughter, they'd suck it up. You know, ball hit you in the face,
suck
pick it up and throw it to first. Yeah. Like, yeah. So I don't know. I think a lot of that has to do with people's background and the way they're brought up.
And again, it's kind of hard for us to see through this because we had parents that were just like, yeah, let's try it. You want to dance, be a dancer, be a gymnast, and like, or be a, I don't care, be a ballerina.
Right,
I don't care what you do. Just be happy. But no, it's not. I think that's the exception rather than the rule. Maybe it's changing now, especially when our millennial generation starts having kids and establishing families. It'll be a little bit more removed from the, you know, stringent gender. Let's raise this as a girl.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, pink and all that sort of stuff, purple and giving them girly toys to play with. Like, no, if she wants to have a erector set and run cranes, let's do that.
Yeah. People should just focus on raising a good human being.
Just loving the human being.
The rights and wrongs and, you know, teach them morals. And.
Well, I mean, then you don't have, there's no stigmas, right? If a girl wants to go into STEM, which is the science and all that stuff.
Technology,
She can go into it and be cool.
And I think, you know, I think we are going that way. I think, like...
I hope so.
My little brother's generation is even...
Yeah,
you know, I think it's slowly transitioning and it's...
He's an interesting one, man. I love that kid.
Yeah.
He's just so full of love. He's just so soft-spoken, full of love.
Yep.
And I'm not sure that he would have been really well received... By our generation growing up.
Right, right.
You know, or maybe just the kids that are a bit older.
Yep.
He would have probably been picked on quite a bit.
Quieter, shy.
Quiet, shy, just like, hey man, love me.
Yeah.
You know, which is sad, and that can put, you know, guys in a really tough place.
Yep, or anybody, really.
Anybody, but I mean, especially for guys when they're told to be tough and be, don't show emotion and don't. I mean, how many friends did you have that you couldn't give a hug to growing up.
Right, right.
Those guys were just like, don't touch me.
Yeah.
Don't touch me.
Only a few, but it's funny. I knew that,
they were
that type, you know, at the time. So it's funny. I don't know. I've always picked up, I think, on those things pretty well. Different, the people and their differences. And it's, you know, it's so hard to nail anything down as far as that goes, as far as masculinity, feminism. You know, it's just kind of, they're just underlying traits, I feel like, you know, all in a...
And it's just what we're encouraged to do, though. It's not like a hug is not neither, it's neither masculine nor feminine.
Right.
But it's been labeled as such. Like, it's not labeled as a masculine thing to do, which is ridiculous.
See, and I don't know why I've never really put much thought into that. I don't know. It's just, to me, I've always seen everybody as equal.
Like, fuck, I've given you like 6 hugs today already.
Right.
So it's just like, you know, of course.
Yeah, and that's normal to me. But that's the thing. I think I'm just so...
Yeah, I need a fucking
okay
hug.
With that, it is normal. Like, I don't even stop to think that it's not, you know? And
right.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And so have you had any moments where you've faced resistance towards that sort of thing, towards, you know, you wanting to be yourself and you faced resistance of it, or you faced...
Oh, yeah. I do all the time. Like, you know, with one of my best friend's dads, you can tell he's more of a man and, you know, saying goodbye, reach out, shakes my hand, and, you know, I'll still give him a hug. Yeah, it's funny because
like,
you can tell.
Those little back taps.
There's some awkwardness there, but it's funny, you know, I've known him my whole life and just over like the last few years... Now he initiates the hug.
Oh, okay.
You know, so it's like he's come around, and it's like, I think certain guys are aware of that they try to hide like their, you know, or show more masculine, you know, there's that masculine side a little bit. Oh, guys don't give hugs, you know, that type. And
my grandpa.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, my grandpa, like, God bless him. I know he's full of love, but it's hard for him to express it a little bit openly. So
right.
Like he'll give... Like, you and I will, like, give a full-on, like, hug.
Right, yeah.
Right, an embrace, almost. He's, like, the half-hug, back-slap guy.
Right.
And he's like, yeah, okay, sure, love you too, yeah, sure. But...
That's how I was growing up, but not because I was awkward with the hug.
Right.
The way I did it.
Well, I think...
As everybody criticized, they'd be like, oh, the one-arm hug.
Yeah, like, the one-arm, like, back-slap, like, don't slap me, just fucking hug me. I don't know, too, we grew up around Mama D., who gives the most amazing hugs you would ever receive in your life. So we had good practice and good role models for warm and deep hugs. But so how would you feel in that moment when you're like, did you feel like I shouldn't be doing this, or how did you feel about that? Those resistance?
It was funny because I you know, depending on who it is, sometimes I expect it to be awkward. I mean, just because I know they're like an older, you know, just a different generation. And I really don't care. Like, I'm going to do it anyways. Like, it's a hug, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
nobody's ever been like, whoa, dude, I'm a dude. You don't give me a hug. Like, you know, nobody's ever stopped me like mid hug. Sure. It's like, okay. Like,
yeah. You just felt awkward, smiled about it, and moved about your day.
Yep.
Yeah. Brett, I think.
I'll give Brett a hug tomorrow when he gets here. Yeah,
dude.
I will.
Dude,
so that'll be, you can
give
see
him a full embrace just so I can watch it. This is going to be great. Because he'll hug me now. Like, he'll kind of give me, like, the little side. Come over here. Like, you know, don't get too close, but come in. I'll
turn your head away from each other.
Turn
hug.
Your head. Like, I don't want to rub up against my beard. Like, yeah, you know, he'll do that now. And that's taken him a long time to do.
Right.
You know how we were growing up.
So it's funny, you've almost got to be somewhat aware, as you know, as that person, that this is awkward, but
I kind of want to do it.
Yeah, I wish I was a little more capable and
didn't
feel awkward.
Yeah, that's what it feels like from him, where he's like, I kind of,
So it's funny, I think it does take people, like,
well,
just chipping away at it and getting it, like, more
getting
used
married
to
and having a boy himself, I think, has softened him quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
changes things.
I've always been able to say, I love you, Brett. But getting him to say it back.
Right, yeah.
Not so much until really the first time he said it to me that really shook me, I guess. Like, he might have said it to me before, but I don't remember. It might have been one of those things where I said, love you. And he goes, yeah, you too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what does that even mean? Did you hear what I said?
Yeah.
But the first time I heard him even say it to me made me like cry.
Catch you off guard.
Well, I was just, I think it was, I don't know at what stage in my dad's cancer it was. But I was talking to him. It was either like right when he got diagnosed or right after his first surgery when they confirmed it was like a glioblastoma and he's got 2 years to live. So it might have been sometime around there. But we were talking on the phone. And he just went, at the end of the phone call, he just goes, I love you, Brad. He prompted it.
Right.
And I just said, I love you too, Brett. And then I hung up the phone and had to pull over the car and just start crying.
Right.
Because I'm like, oh my God, it took, like, I felt so good in a way, but also like it took the death of our father to start it. And I wish, you know, sometimes I wish guys would just, you know, just be connected a little bit more in that way.
Yeah. I think that's what triggers guys to like slowly make that change. Death. That is what they want.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, yeah. They want it. They just don't.
It's hard.
We're not comfortable with initiating it.
Yeah.
Because we're not, you know, we weren't taught to.
Right. Which, you know, and it's funny and a lot of the things, you know.
But I mean, yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say all those things, you know, all those people that, any guys that I give hugs to, they're all people I know, obviously, friends and family. And so it's funny that it shouldn't even be that hard. It's not like it's a complete stranger. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, you know, some of the change comes in when you're just, when men are just like patiently loved after a certain amount of time, like it's okay to love back. You know what I mean? Like a guy like Brett, it's like, he just needs to be patiently loved over time and eventually it rubs off on him.
Right.
But, you know, kind of thinking about a little bit what we went through as men together with my dad and his siblings, you know, as he's passing away, it was really interesting because he softened up quite a bit towards me and I softened up. I changed towards him in quite a bit because, you know, he fucking tortured me growing up. He was an asshole.
Yep. The instigator.
He was an asshole. And, you know, I get it, big brother, but when we came to each other's level, I relaxed a little bit and stopped being a little whiny ass prick, you know, and then he just softened up quite a bit.
Right.
But, it's just, I'm glad it's happened. And I feel like that's a gift, my dad gave us through his death.
Right.
It's just kind of how I frame some of that. Like he gave us some powerful gifts during that time. And that's just kind of one of the things, that I'm so grateful for through all that. I remember there's one very specific time that I remember. This was right before his second surgery, so a year through his diagnosis.
Okay.
He was in pretty rough shape at that point. He was kind of starting to, he regressed as a person. Like he went to kind of a childlike state. He was in a nursing home in California because he got too hard for Kelly to take care of. And we were sitting there watching Brett. It was just Brett, my dad, and I. Just kind of the one more intimate moments all three of us had. We were sitting there watching an Oregon Duck football game. That might have been the last like football game we all watched together. But my dad was kind of goofy at that point. Like, I don't know how else to say it, but he's just kind of goofy, you know. And Brett and I were just kind of sitting there quietly with him. And my dad just... We're watching the game and he just goes, hey guys, hey guys. And he just paused and we both, Brett and I, would look at each other like, and then look at him and go, yeah. And he goes, I love you guys. And then there was another, we're like, yeah, I love you too, Dad. And then there was another just pause of silence by everybody. Hey guys, hey guys. I love you guys. And he did that like three more times. And by the, you know, third or fourth time, Brett and I are just like fucking busting up laughing.
Right.
But it was just like moments like that where we just really connected and we dropped, like it seemed to start really dissolving this male masculine macho thing we had between us. of me resisting it and him wanting to apply it to me. And it was just, you know, we've come out of it now and we can, we're pretty cool now. We're way different around each other now. It's just good.
It's an interesting word, resist, you know, it's like, I think that's a lot of people's issues, you know, or I don't know. I think when you just give in to something, you know, something that you want or something that feels natural, you know, but when you're resisting it just because of what you, how you think something should be, or, you know, I think that's, that holds you back.
And I think, you know, for us who kind of grew up, not really buying into these masculine stereotypes, we never really resisted feeling like we could just do whatever we want.
Right.
Like we didn't feel unnatural.
No.
I don't know if that's, was that learned? Were we born like that?
I know. I couldn't hold much back as a kid. Everything I did was like out in the open.
Yeah.
Every thought I had was like out in words, you know, it's just that way.
I don't, I'm just trying to figure out, like, how would you teach that?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just something that happens.
Yeah.
Some people might be lucky enough to be naturally that way, or maybe have been brought up in just the right, you know, environment that they, that came really easy for them. But I think for a lot of people, there's so much criticism out there, and not even just gender, but I mean, just of, you know, how you should be, what's cool, what's not, what's, yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, there's going to be something in this podcast where I get criticized for.
Right.
Something
right.
we said.
Somebody.
Just somebody.
Yep.
Just,
it'll strike a nerve.
Yeah.
You know,
one thing, and that's, somebody. That's fine. That's what we're here to listen. But like, there's just so much criticism out there as opposed to listening.
You never know either. Like, what will affect somebody else, you know, and why.
Like, sure. And that's an important point. Like, to understand when, you know, kids are little and impressionable, like, be mindful of what you're saying and doing around them, because you don't know how that's going to affect them later.
Yeah.
And I mean, I've got so many examples of that, whether it be stuff with my mom, you know, like, I can think of why I don't like green, like, peas, like cooked peas, because I remember one time that she's like, eat those peas. And I ate them and like threw up.
Right.
And for the rest of my life, I've never liked peas.
Yeah. Yep.
Like just stupid
bad association.
Stuff. Yeah. So, you just gotta be mindful around little kids. Even though I was talking to your dad earlier and he was like, yeah, all this, you know, all this gender stuff, society puts that on them.
Yeah.
That's all applied by society. We aren't born with a gender. We're born biologically with a set of testicles or not, right? We're born with a gender.
And that's the way I've always thought. That's why it's hard for me to like think any other way or like try to get a little deeper into the psychological aspect.
Masculinity and femininity stuff.
Yep.
And we're all probably born with an inclination to have both of those things in us.
Right. I recognize people's traits, but I don't look at a person and expect them to have a certain trait because they're a woman or because they're a man.
Well, you're not defining them. You're not saying you're a male based on this trait.
Yeah. Well, I don't expect that biker wearing leather and tats to be, you know, it's like you can't really look at them and say, like, you know, I expect them to be the big brooding type.
Well, it's always funny.
You know what I mean?
Like, you can see there's some, I can't remember what movie, but it's like, maybe it was an Adam Sandler movie where there's this big biker dude wearing leather and stuff, and it turns out he's gay and likes men, and like it's the complete opposite trope.
Really
high voice, and like, you know, he likes dudes. So there's always that juxtaposition that's kind of made fun of a little bit, as opposed to like what you would expect that guy to be.
So I never look at people and expect like anything like that. You know, it's funny. I don't pick up on those cues until I've actually interacted with them, and then you realize like, oh, that was interesting. That guy that's all decked out in black, that was pretty, you know.
Right.
He, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a better example.
No, I think
but,
that's a super healthy way to look at it, though. Like,
there's so
I'm not
going to
judge
variables.
This person. Like, I'm not going to judge this person. I
don't
expect anything from this person.
Yeah.
Let me meet this person. Let me see who this person is.
There's definitely typical and atypical, you know, but I mean, on with
from
anything.
The, from the norm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what is that?
That's right. You're right. Society.
Who gets to decide what's normal?
Yeah.
You know?
That comes as a whole, I think, you know, is like what we put out. Is, you know.
How, I mean, so we clearly have some norm, you know, quote unquote, feminine and masculine norms, right?
Right.
And how do you think we can shift those? What does that look like? We talked a little bit yesterday about systemic racism, not on the podcast, but just to each other. And when you have a system that was built by racist people, obviously there's the whole system is going to be racist.
Right.
You know, and that's what systemic racism is. It's built into society.
And racism can be taught. You know what I mean?
Right.
You're not born with it. Like,
so if there's systemic issues with masculinity and femininity.
Racism is taught, not can be.
Right. No, it is. Yeah, for sure is. So how do we shift? How do we get to the point where we're just not, there is no separation? How do we change the system?
Right. You know, I've never sat down and like,
neither have I,
talked with a hardcore racist, you know, to like,
I don't
understand.
I don't even mean racism. I was using that for example. I
right.
Mean, like,
right.
With the gender issue, you were saying that, you know, we do have established traditional views of masculinity and femininity.
That's why I think that whole resistance thing is really odd. I think everybody has it. I don't think it's a matter of changing anybody. It's well, I mean, all about what we reveal to people.
How do we change the system to encourage people to have your view where it's like, let me just sit down with this person and learn who they are.
Right. Yeah. And just be authentic. Just be yourself. Whether what you say in that moment is masculine or feminine. True. You know what I mean? Like, just be okay with saying it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you avoid saying something that you think is going to be feminine because you're a dude, then you're resisting right there. Like, you know, and you're just holding yourself back a little bit. So,
well, I was even reading a Harvard Business Review article today that was talking about how both men and women are treated in the workplace. And one of them was saying that women are seen as more interested in providing for their family, which they cited several studies where they said that's not true.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That's not true. And I think
it's all the same.
Granted, from my experience, I feel women, most women are more loving, you know, and open. That's just my feeling I get from women versus men.
Right.
Could be just women and men I've been around. But on the whole, according to these studies, that's not true. But if that view is held in the workplace, you're going to treat people differently.
Right.
And so that's the systemic stuff I'm talking about, where it's already, it's built into work culture.
Yeah.
It's built into all these things.
Right.
And it's like, you know, like that probably needs to change.
Yep. And I don't think there is any answer that will just change it. But I mean, I think we're...
What's a good start? How do we even start that? Do we...
I think it is. I think the ball's rolling forward, you know, and I think it just takes time.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely opened up, we definitely revealed, you know, Me Too movement stuff that was like, holy shit.
It really is like an evolution.
Can't believe all this stuff is going on. Yeah. Yeah.
And so sometimes it takes that older generation, you know, it takes someone from our generation. Yeah. Well, no, it takes someone from our generation
to take it,
to explain it to my dad, you know, and like give him a little hindsight or like, I mean, a little perspective, you know, as far as, it's okay. Like, you know, to, you know, I don't know, just,
it's hard, man.
Yeah.
I don't expect us to have all the answers now or any answers, but...
But if things had just ended, you know, after our parents' generation, no more people are born. Like, you know, things would have just continued. So I think it takes new ideas, new, you know, every year. I know there's just so many changes. It's just big evolution.
It takes us to be a little more, like, allow people to, you know, express their problems.
Right.
Or say, hey, you know, this person, this is what's going on over here. The casting couch stuff with, you know, women being told that they need to give sexual favors for jobs.
Right.
Like, we should probably listen to those women, and they haven't been listened to. And that's a pretty simple change. But, like, I hope it can actually be like that creates a sustainable change.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty tough stuff, though. What... So we kind of circling back around our story a little bit. We're back up to 2009, and now you're healthy and living in Anacortes, right?
Yep.
So you're in a really interesting situation, and I've felt like we've talked about this before, but you're not in the typical, I wouldn't say you have the typical American living situation.
No, I've definitely got a very unique life and lifestyle for sure.
But again, much like the other stuff we were talking about, you really embrace it, like, beautifully, I think. And I
really appreciate it. Like, I definitely don't take it for granted. You know, I realize what I've got is not typical. It's not normal.
Yeah, and just to explain, like, you live with your parents.
Yep.
You stay, you know, it's a big house, so there's plenty of space.
Yeah, this is like a 6,000 square foot home, so
yes, yeah. Yeah,
so my room is bigger than most people's apartments.
Yeah, basically. You're not. It's bigger than my apartment, so you're not cramped.
No,
you're not. You can do your own thing.
And I've got the money to go out and get my own place, but it sounds really depressing. You know, it's funny. Like, I would just pretty much go home to an empty home every day, and like feel like I would. That would bug me a little bit.
Yeah,
but I like coming home and having like the social aspect. You know,
you
I
love
know.
Your family.
I do. They're all. They're like some of my best friends.
Why do you think I'm here right now?
Definitely. Yeah.
Because I love being around my fucking family.
Yeah.
You know. So I don't. I think I've shared this with you. I don't see the problem in it.
No, you do. I'm single. Like, Eastern. I don't have a house bill. You know. I mean, I don't have a mortgage to pay. I don't have an electric bill. You know. And yeah, it's like, oh. Aren't you lucky, you know? And it's great, but I have a unique situation where...
So this would be more common in Eastern culture.
Right,
You cohabitate with your family. You take care of your family.
Yeah, like maybe get a partner and then...
Maybe you get a partner and she moves in here.
Right,
And then, like, I don't see the problem with that. And then you take care of your parents when they're no longer able to take care of themselves.
Right.
You don't... Like, it's so weird in America that we abandon our old people.
Right.
It's... I mean, have you thought about how inhumane that is?
Yeah. Yeah. That is weird.
And so, I mean, I think your situation is super special. Like, I look at your relationship with your parents and it's just fucking amazing.
Yeah.
You guys are like best friends.
Right.
Yeah. You probably grind on each other a little bit here and there.
Very rarely.
Very rarely. But I'm sure it happens and, you know, but you're able to get over it.
Yeah.
And figure it out and love each other. But what kind of flack have you gotten for your situation or heard? Have you heard any people give you comments for it?
No, you know, most people, it's funny because I usually kind of have an idea of what they might think.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I live with my parents. It's like, you know, but it's funny. Most people are kind enough that, you know, that they won't say anything, even my good friends, but I think they know the situation too. But you know, if I had just met a stranger and it's just like, yeah, I live with my parents. I'm 31 years old.
Yeah.
You know, or so it's kind of funny. But at the same time, you know, the way I see it is, God, it sounds dumb to go out and, like, just because I'm told I should have my own place, let me go spend, you know, $1,000 plus a month.
Thousand?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm just talking, like...
$1,400 for a one-bedroom in Portland that I spend. It's like, I'm like, can I move in up here with you guys?
Oh, thank goodness I don't live in Portland.
Jesus,
yeah,
man.
That's how Seattle, too. Same
Fuck
thing.
Fuck that.
Yeah. But it's like, man, just because that's, like, what... society thinks it should be, you know. It's like, oh,
American society.
Yeah, that's just culture. It's like, oh, there's just a grown man living in his parents' basement. You know, but everybody has that, like,
that's the thing. You've already, I think you're pretty clear on where you stand as a man. You just don't really think about it, and you feel like a man. You feel like a grown ass
I'm more
man,
focused
right?
on me, you know.
You're just, like, more focused on being a better person.
Yeah,
which is beautiful. But have you ever thought, like, do grown men do this?
Oh, for sure. I know that. Yeah.
Has that been a struggle? In what ways has that been a struggle?
Not even just a grown man. Does a grown person do this?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's not even like, I'm definitely aware that that's not like what mainstream society, you know,
sure.
Everyone has that, that idea of, you know,
what you should be doing.
Yeah. Yep.
That's just,
but it's like, man, I've got this freedom too, that most people don't, like, you know. In one aspect that I work with the family business, I could be like, yeah, you know, I'm going to take a month off and go to Europe.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, okay, tell us when, you know. And it's like, I could leave and not have any real, you know, serious bills, like major expensive bills to worry about, you know. And
you know.
And I contribute around here as well.
Yeah,
like,
you
know,
for
it's
sure.
like.
Do I, yeah, mow the lawn, do the dishes.
Yeah, this is a big house, you know, it'd be a lot
big
for.
Big house. So you're adding a lot to the household,
right?
You're adding to the business. You're doing all these things, and it's just, I don't know. It's hard. It's hard for me to wrap my head around what's wrong with, and I'm not saying it is wrong, but it's why people think it might be weird.
Right. Right. Like, where did that stigma come from? Like,
yeah,
I think most of it is pop culture.
Well, just how
you picture
American.
The guy playing like video games in his parents' basement, like not contributing in any way to like society or to the household or to like.
Have you ever felt like you were on your own?
Yeah, well, you know, when I after my parents moved up to Washington after high school.
How did that feel in comparison?
Oh, it was good. You know, and it was funny with that situation.
Like, were you like, whoa, I'm alone here?
You know, I did it. You know, it was funny about that. My parents moved to Washington and left me with an entire house. And I insisted on moving out and getting my own place. And paying,
oh weird,
you know, $1,000 a month.
No, that's fucking weird.
Yeah, so it's funny. That's like that because that's what society, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to live in my parents' house, you know. So we all moved out and got roommates and rented our own home,
empty house for free.
Yeah, we left a house empty, like, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
And my dad is paying the mortgage on every month.
Same one that I lived in.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yep. Yep. So I basically did that because of what I thought was right or wrong, or you know, what society tells us is appropriate or not. So
I wonder if,
but yeah, I was on my own for a few years after that, you know. Yeah.
And did you, so I mean, I'm sure that felt great, but comparison, when you came back, what is that, did it feel like you were coming home and you were more at ease when you came back? What did it feel like when you came back?
It was weird at first to like be around my parents and like, you know, have them around like, yeah, all the time, you know. It was like something about having been off on my own, but I was still young and insecure, you know, so I don't know, there were a lot of things I was still, you know, getting over it, you know, breaking up that relationship with Danielle and all that stuff. So I was dealing with a ton of stuff right now. It was hard to even take it all in, but yeah. So yeah, it was weird moving back in with my parents after moving up here. But I still, even at that point, like my intentions were, I'm going to come up here, but I'm going back to Tucson. Yeah. Like, I don't plan on moving up here. That just kind of happened. You know, I ended up liking it here more and more.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that kept me from getting my own place here for a long time. It's like that was going to, you know, that would have like sealed it that I'm staying, you know?
Sure.
There was like a commitment that I wasn't willing to make, because for at least the first 5 years I was up here, I just kind of constantly was in this like, yeah, I'm up here, but I'm going to go back. It's where my friends are. It's where I'm happy. You know, it was like really odd, but it really formed who I am today. You know, they were just a lot of little aspects of that, you know, some that were really tough, like things I went through that were really tough, and not to get any specifics, I can't even think of any, but in the end, in hindsight, it was all important, you know, as insignificant as it seemed at the time, or as important as it seemed at the time, you know. It's like those things ended up being insignificant. So,
sure. Oh man. So what point did you know, you said you had some insecurities coming back that you were still dealing with, and you had a lot of shit, obviously, you were going through, but at what point in the last 10 years now have you been like, okay, I'm feeling pretty good about where I am as an adult? Like, you know what I mean? Like, where you're confident in who you are, you love who you are. I mean, it seems like you've always loved who you are.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just that you had the confidence and the kind of fuck you attitude just to be like, this is me and I love it.
Yeah,
When did you kind of hit that point?
Oh, and you know, I probably, there's still parts of me that I resist to, you know, that I'm like nervous to show. But
we all do, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, as with anybody. But I would say in the last, like...
That wasn't to dismiss that.
No. But I would say in the last 5 years or so, probably, was where I just really kind of got into like a
good place,
a better groove. Yeah. As far as just stop to smell the flowers a little bit, you know, just enjoy things. I became way more connected, I think, with things up here. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, early on, I had like so much solitude that it was almost probably unhealthy. Mm-hmm. So much time alone with my own thoughts. And then, you know, it was like it all transformed into this greater understanding of myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I need and what I don't. And
but along the way, what I'm hearing you saying is you were allowing yourself to feel all these emotions.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't resist it or block it out.
That's huge. That's not encouraged.
It felt natural by men, you know, and I,
right. But it's not encouraged for most men.
Right.
But it's a key thing that I think has made you, just observationally from a guy who doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about, it just, to me, why you're such a beautiful person is that you've embraced all these things and worked on them and stayed open and felt things.
Right. And I'm constantly, even today, there's things I wish I want to, you know,
quiet,
want to improve on. Yeah, and I will, you know. Yeah.
I had asked you earlier about when you felt like you were first on your own. and just kind of just share so I don't leave you like I was the only one sharing. I want to make sure I'm in staying open too. But I felt that when I was in my first time was when I was back in Walport going to high school. So like my
after you were down in Arizona.
Yep.
And then you went back. Okay.
And then when I was full time in Walport, so
and your dad was in Hawaii.
Yep.
Right.
So yeah. He was in. So it was like Arizona and Hawaii. I tried to go to school in both of those, but then eventually I went back and lived with my aunt and uncle. And it was that point where, look, I'm super grateful for the roof I had over my head, and the food, obviously, I had on the table, the safety in that respect, my kind of lowest levels of needs were met.
And you're appreciative of that now, but at the time, was that your... I'm just thinking back about
no,
you.
No, I'm trying.
You
to, I'm trying
more
to put,
concerned with other.
I'm trying
other
to,
things.
I'm trying to put my head in that space that age. Like, yeah, my point is, I felt alone, like I was on my own.
Right.
Like I wasn't emotionally supported.
You seemed frustrated.
I was super frustrated. It was super. My dad left. Like I speak highly of my dad all the time. I love him. I wouldn't ask for a better father. But yeah, he like left us.
Right.
Like
right.
He's a flawed individual. I mean, when he left to go to Hawaii, I was like, man, good for you.
He didn't realize the impact it would have on you. He was so focused on himself.
Right. And
not in a selfish way.
No, he was trying to get love, right?
Right,
and
right.
Everybody wants to be loved, and he was seeking that romantic relationship. And I loved him so much that it was like, good for you, man. Go chase your dreams.
At the same time, he left you.
At the same time, I was 14 years old when I was saying that.
Yeah.
And so here we are. I'm like... You know, and again, I'm grateful for what they did, but not emotionally supported what I needed as a teenager. You know, I wasn't getting any parenting necessarily as, you know, love from parents,
right.
So to speak.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I felt alone all throughout high school, just like raising myself pretty much, trying to learn what it means to be a good friend, what it means to be a good father, what it means to whatever. And yeah, I always talked with my dad and stuff and got sagely advice from him, but still, Jesus, man, like being alone for all that time was tough.
That is.
It was tough. And then getting into college where I already felt like a grown ass man by the time I was 18, where I felt like I was 35.
So it's funny. It's like, yeah, you know, it's totally different than the way that I was raised and the way I was brought up. And it's just kind of goes to show you how things shape and mold people, you know? And
right. But now and I think I mentioned this when we were talking off the podcast, where it was, we can all take different paths and get to the same point.
Right.
Because now I see you and I as living very, having parallel ways of thinking.
Yeah, definitely. We're
deeply introspective, almost to the point where it's like, okay, I wish... Like, let's come out of that a little bit sometimes.
And, you know, I have a little too. It was bad a few years ago where I would get so deep into it that it would like, I would overanalyze things.
Yeah.
And it took a few years of like just letting go, you know, and just kind of.
Well, when I was living in, you know, when I was living in London, I had some pretty dark nights and dark days where I was so deep into my own head. Rooting around in things that made me super uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Where, like, I think it was beneficial, but at some...
In the moment, it's really hard.
It was fucking dark. Yeah. And it was lonely, and it was like, I guess I need to be here, but I hope I'm not here for a lot longer.
Right.
But then you emerge from it, and you just have this sense of clarity.
It's not even like a snap of a finger emerge from it. It, like, is a long... climb up the hill to get out.
There were some tools I guess I used. I started listening to different podcasts that changed my perspective on the world.
Right. Hearing other people.
Yeah. Hearing other people talk about the same issues. You know, you're like, oh, I can connect with that person. I'm not that different.
Yeah.
Other people are having the same struggles.
Just seeing that it's possible that you can come out of something like that, like with like a good, you know, is like that. It's motivating. It gives you some hope, you know, when you're in that state of mind.
And
to see that you can come out and like be normal again, you know, is like a.
And so it's nice interesting because I hear you tell a story about, you know, the drug problem and then moving up here and then getting into this introspective work and then arriving to this place. I pretty much had the same type of path where I'm raising myself. I wasn't really working on myself as a human. I felt like I was trying to satisfy my own emotions for the longest of times,
right,
as opposed to improving myself.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to keep myself alive. And then I go to school and I'm doing the same thing. And then it gets to the point where I'm out of school and I'm like, well, fucking now what? It's like, oh, I didn't develop all these skills all this long time because I was doing this other shit.
Right.
And then you just go into this deep introspection.
Yeah.
But then you start learning about your personality and how you thrive and the tools that you can use to, you know, leverage your personality traits to make yourself happy.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to know where you
excel. And I'm not saying overanalyze. I'm just saying learn about yourself. There's a difference, I think.
Yeah.
You know,
recognize like when you have a weakness that, or a strength, you know, psychologically, something that you can.
And so when you started to become, you know, deeply introspective, did that change any of your relationships with your friends or your family at all? Insofar as like, you know, a lot of the early relationships that we form as boys are through sports and they're through other things like that, that you may not be as interested in now. Like our connection has never been through sports.
No.
It's always just been kind of a passing thing that we might talk
about. Yeah. And that was probably NBA as a kid. You know what I mean? That was it.
Maybe.
NBA.
It was we like, didn't, how much did we actually know about
no,
it?
No, it was just about, yeah.
It was just a thing we talked about on the side. But, so did you have any relationships or anything change or have anybody comment to you, about your new introspective look on life?
You know, Joey, he's like one of my oldest friends. I've probably known him about as long as you. And, you know, we were really good friends when we were kids, probably from the time we were, literally we knew each other from the time we were born. My sister and his sister were good, really good friends. And, you know, we were really close all the way through middle school. And then we went to different high schools. We literally lost connection for a good 5-6 years. And then after everything I went through, finishing up school, going through the addiction, moving up to Washington, I reconnected with him. And he had that same, he was really into the psychological aspect of, you know, meditation and self-improvement and bettering yourself and stuff like that. So it's funny, he kind of really, you know, it was nice having him as a resource that we would really bounce things off of each other, like just as far as hypotheticals and like what ifs and, you know, it just really helped me expand my mind a little bit. And I realized how much fun it was just to really go off the deep end a little bit and like just, you know, speculate. Like,
dude, we were fucking, what were we talking about yesterday with aliens and Egyptian societies that had higher technologies than we have today. So,
right. Yeah.
It's fun to go off into that, but it's not.
There's just so much we don't know. Like, there's just.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's just the human mind, the brain, our bodies. Yeah. I mean, there's so much that we're capable of that we limit ourselves to. And,
but not everyone likes talking about that shit.
Right.
And so
a lot of people think it's just, you know, hocus pocus. You know, it's like, oh, that hippie shit, you know, metaphysical properties of stones. And, you know, we get.
And so you didn't really have any relationships change because of that new outlook.
Well, it's interesting. Like, you know, that was a relationship I never really had with Joey.
So that one actually grew.
It did. Okay. Like we, yeah. Oh, cool. Yeah, for sure. Like we realized how close and how similar we were. Like,
yeah.
And on topics and subjects that we had never even really discussed together before that, it was just all hanging out and sports and.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting when I observe our relationship, super close as kids, maybe we weren't sharing intimate details about whatever, but we were close, right?
Right.
We just probably weren't prepared to share like that. We didn't know how. It wasn't important at the time. And then we kind of got disconnected for a long time and had our own paths and did our own things around our 20s. But then it's like we just circled back around and met each other when we were both turned into introspective people.
Yeah. We took our different paths.
We took our different paths to arrive at the same place. And it was like, oh, hey, man. And we just happen to be still familiar in that way.
Yeah.
And connected, I think, even stronger.
For sure.
But it's interesting that it can go the other way, too, where, you know, I've had some relationships change, you know, become a little more introspective and a little less interested in sports and stuff. And, you know, not everyone wants to talk about it. And I understand that. So,
right.
That can be hard, but, you know, I guess you just kind of move on.
Well, it's interesting, like with Lance, which you know, Lance as well. And, you know, after that one summer that he came up with us and spent the summer, and then he flew up to Alaska because his family had moved up there. You know, I didn't see him or have contact with him because there wasn't any social media or anything like that. You know, and we didn't have cell phones. We were just kids. But
we're a bunch of old heads.
Yep.
Kids out there.
Yeah, that is crazy. So I didn't have any contact with him for about 10 years. And same thing, he was about the closest thing to a, you know, biological brother that I could have had just because he was with us, like, at least, you know, more than half the year. Every single day. Yeah. I mean, he spent so many holidays, soccer, you know, everything that we did together. But anyways, completely lost connection for about a good 10 or 15 years and then reconnected. And it's really odd now because, you know, it's like we haven't really gotten to hang out a whole lot. We haven't gotten to really reconnect. So we're kind of just still have those roots of the childhood memories. But at the same time, it's like he's still the type that would... If I was like, dude, you know, I'm in some stuff, like I need you right now. He would be like, I'll get a ticket right this second. Right. And I will be there. You know, and that's what, you know, you were saying earlier as well. So that's one interesting, you know, relationship where you can tell we both like want to reconnect. And it's like we just haven't gotten to, you know, we're totally different people than the last time that we saw each other. And, you know, so it's that one's kind of in the works, in the progress. Yeah. It's interesting, but we both keep talking about trying to meet up and just take a trip, you know, just meet up somewhere. And because it's funny, the few times that I've gotten to see him, like I flew out for his wedding, and obviously he had all of his friends that he met after he left Arizona and moved up to Alaska. The guys I haven't met, but also took him in like a brother, you know, that's his other family.
His crew, yeah.
He says he has three families and he's, you know, so he's got his family, his Freeland family, and then his like Alaska family as well. So it was kind of cool to see like those people that shaped him and then took him in after he like left us, you know, and like they made him into such a, you know, an amazing person. Obviously, you know, he was already a great person, but they really harnessed it and just fueled him to just motivated him to like be the best version of himself. Huh. And he's ended up so great, so successful, so happy for him. But we don't quite have that same connection. You know what I mean? We've not gotten to reconnect, basically. So it's kind of like us. After all those years that we didn't really get to chat, that's about where me and him are right now. It's kind of like we just kind of started reconnecting, but we're not quite there.
Not quite there yet.
Yeah.
Hmm. It's interesting. Male relationships are super interesting, too. Because some of them, I talked about this on another episode where... instant bromances are really interesting. You know, have you ever just met a guy where you're just like almost best friends right away?
Right, right.
But then again, like some of them are just built on really shaky ground that if you change that they're almost just gone.
Yeah, yep.
They're almost just gone. Yeah, it was interesting. You mentioned Lance coming up for that summer. That was like, I remember just thinking about that. That was kind of a weird summer.
Yeah, yeah, because I know there's always like that.
There was kind of
third
a little
wheel
competitive
feeling.
Yeah, there was always,
you know,
that.
You guys hadn't met, so it was kind
all
of like,
three of us probably felt like a third wheel, which was like a really awkward thing.
Yeah, because there was going to be me and you in our history.
Yeah,
there's going to be me and Lance in our history, and obviously you guys didn't really
to
know
melt
each other.
Those together.
Yeah,
yeah, I haven't thought about that obviously since probably it happened.
Right,
but
and my point was the relationship I still have with Lance is that we're so entwined like brothers that. There's nothing that we'll never lose
have a
contact.
Yeah.
Even if we don't like, maybe I'm sure we, you know, if we had the opportunity, we'd probably reconnect really well, but we just haven't had that time yet. Like everything we've done has been with so many other people, his family. And it's like, he can't give his attention and I can't either, you know?
One of the things I always appreciate about my male relationships are like, once I have a connection, I feel like the connection is always there.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And you know, us growing up, it all sounds like, you know, lollipops and gumdrops, but like, you know, we would argue a little bit and get pissed every so often, but usually like 10 minutes later, it was all good.
Yeah. Yep. Just and that's human nature.
We let it go.
Yeah.
And I've always appreciated that about all my male relationships.
Right.
Where it's just like, yeah, man, let's just move on. And I think, I don't know if people always buy into that. Like, no, there's something else there. You're still pissed. It's like, no, it's all good. But I've always just appreciated that ability to be like, what, like with Lance, what you're describing.
Yeah.
Kind of hear you saying, like, we'll always have that connection.
Yeah. Like, he's one of three people, you, Joey, and Lance. You guys would always have my back, like, at the drop of a dime.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, I have no doubt about that.
Yeah. Those are important to have.
And that's, relationships. Yeah, that's us, like, hardly really getting to see each other or communicate over almost the last 20 years of our lives.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right. Yeah, do you feel like you've had female relationships like that?
No, not to that level. Not outside of, like, romantic relationships, like, you know.
How are you with making friends with women?
I'm always nervous, man.
As a single person, like, what if both of you are single? How are you with that?
It's, you know, it's funny. I've not, like, it's been really weird since I moved to Washington. I've not really made an effort to make friends at all. And it was almost more that I really enjoyed my time by myself. Yeah. And it's funny, that's after a job that's, like, extremely social. And I go, and all I do is talk to people all day long.
Yeah.
Guys, girls, whatever. You know, our age, older, it's just, it's all fine. And then it's, you know, it's, I am just always that shy person. So I always have that shy, I can make it awkward,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
with the girl. It's like, and that's just me. It's just like who I am. I was going to say weakness, but it's not really.
No, I mean, it's just who you are.
Who I am, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, I get shit for this, but it is hard for me to be friends with girls sometimes, you know?
Right.
I try. I think I can do it. I've done it with some, right? But.
And you always look at a girl.
When I'm single.
Right, right. Well, yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's interesting because, you know, it's almost like every girl that comes into your life, it's like you.
Potential.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, and it's funny that that's the way it is. And I'm sure it's the other way around as well. But, you
maybe,
know, if you're single.
I have no idea.
I don't know. Yeah. So it's funny that it always kind of just crosses your mind, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, well, whether potential friend, potential, yeah, or no potential at
or
all.
Or no,
you know?
Potential. It, yeah, might take, yeah, me a week to realize, yeah, no. So, you know.
Right.
You know, it does, like, I don't like just continuously look for a relationship with a woman if I'm single, but it's like, you know, so eventually I'll just be like, yeah, that's not going to work.
Right.
But so that's interesting too, how we form friends,
yeah,
relationships.
Yep.
Yeah, but having those close relationships with men, are really important, I think.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, I'm gonna grab the computer really here. You got your headset on. He's grabbing the computer here so I can access some questions. Some questions. All right. I was pointing, and you're like, "What the fuck are you pointing at?"
I was sitting down for far enough that I couldn't see the laptop.
You're like, "What am I looking at?"
Yeah, I was looking out the window.
You're like, "Cool, bro. It's sunny outside. Cool story."
I was looking for the dogs.
Yeah, maybe a little verbal communication would help in this case. So we got part two here of What Women Wonder. So I have a new set of questions for you.
All right,
and then I have kind of the quick hitters at the end that I like to ask everyone. This was a really interesting one, cause I hadn't thought about this. It's kind of a statement and a question. So the statement is this person is interested in why men seem so much less proactive in advocating for men issues, quote unquote, men issues, such as rape in prison, circumcision, etc., outside of using these as counterpoints to feminine arguments and attempting to trip up movements like Me Too. Why don't men activate as women do?
Wait. Say that all again.
That's a lot
to take in. Yeah.
So if you look at women right now and how they're really advocating for other women in the Me Too movement.
Right.
Why don't men do that for quote unquote men's issues such as rape in prison, circumcision.
Right. Right.
Other than using those things as a counterpoint to feminism. So why aren't men just simply advocating for men's rights as much verbally?
God, because I feel like it has never been an issue, men's rights. Men have always had all the rights. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think the only reason it is what it is with women right now is because of the lack of in the past, yeah. You know? But in an ideal place, it shouldn't exist at all, and it should just be equal. And
I think, oh man, I think you really answered that succinctly and good, but like, we haven't seen a peaceful protest about men being raped in prison.
No.
Like, that's just a culture that's almost expected.
Right.
But
yeah.
That's, like, that's a problem too.
Yeah.
Like, they're in prison for a reason, but that doesn't mean they should be raped. Right.
Right.
So, you know, and even beyond that, like, circumcision itself is a pretty, like, barbaric and unnecessary thing.
Right. Yep.
And I don't know.
A lot of people's religion comes into fact with yeah, that. So it's
sure.
Like,
sure. But if it's a non-religious thing, why are you doing that?
Right,
but I think the point is why don't men seem to be advocating for other men in certain ways?
That's interesting. I mean,
maybe we just don't feel like it's a problem.
Yeah,
like,
don't feel the need to.
It's like, oh, fucking, we're fine.
I mean, I'm not going to go out of my way to advocate, but if it's something I guess
for me, I'd rather advocate for women.
I would just advocate for any human being in front of me. You
well,
know?
Yeah, like, but I mean, specifically with women, that they don't enjoy the same, you know, liberties as a man does. They don't have really the same rights in some respects that men do. So I don't know. I just, for me, I'd rather spend my time in helping women.
Yeah.
I've never even thought about it.
Yeah, that's weird. I haven't. I mean, it's not the question, but I mean, yeah, it's weird. I haven't put much thought into that either.
Because I wouldn't even know. I wouldn't even, if you asked me, what do you think the biggest men's rights issue is? What would you even say?
Yeah, I have no idea. That's what I'm trying to think right now.
Maybe like, let's just brainstorm. Let's just maybe getting paternal leave, like to go, you know, to be with your newborn child.
Right. Yeah.
But women don't have that either. Right. So, you know, I don't know.
It's interesting how things kind of change, though. You know, there's a lot more stay-at-home dads now. Like,
and it's maybe it's not even a rights thing, but like, if you had a job where you traveled a lot and you did a lot of work, as a man, you're not exactly encouraged to say, "Hey, I need some time off. I'm tired.
Right.
I'm tired."
Yeah,
that's not encouraged. But it's not really a rights issue,
right? Well, it's interesting, you know, and I may get this wrong because I haven't even watched it yet, but like that Apollo 13 that was just released, you know, and it was all the women that were trained to be astronauts, you know,
right.
And then basically they just decided that this is a man's job. So they all, you know, never even got the opportunity to like go into space or to do, you know, basically what they had trained for, you know, for probably months, years. I haven't watched it yet, but it looks interesting. But, you know, that was a totally different time. That's crazy. That was, you know, late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah,
maybe mid 60s. I need to watch it. But just time, I think, is, you know, recognizing what we've done wrong in the past and moving forward from it.
Sure.
And it's not as easy as snapping your fingers. But
yeah, but it's, yeah, and to answer this question, I don't know.
Yeah.
For me, I just rather would advocate for women. Guys will be fine.
Right. Yep.
we need to be taken down a notch or two anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I like questions that I haven't thought about ever. So the second part here, this is an interesting one because I've thought about this quite a bit over the last year or so. What do you view as the main tenets of a friendship versus the main tenets of a relationship?
Repeat that one more time.
What do you view as the main tenets of a friendship versus the main tenets of a relationship? What's the difference?
Gosh,
how do you recognize the difference?
I think the attraction. That's...
Do you think
sum it up easily?
I guess so, but do you think I could find a female friend who's just a friend attractive?
Right, exactly. Yeah, but you know,
or what do you, you know, what do you, at what point if you had a female friend, or a male friend, if you're whatever your preference is,
right?
Like, at what point would you start considering that person? Like, how do you? What's the difference between being in a relationship and a friendship?
That's funny. Like,
can it be just simply stripped down to physical intimacy?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Because it's funny. I've always said, you know, like, it. You know, it's been pretty hard to find like the female version of like my best friends, and I don't mean like they're obviously they've got their masculine qualities, but that same type of connection, you know. And it's like most of the time it happened, you know, throughout my life. The three best friends I've got, obviously they're guys, but.
And it's certainly not. I don't want to date myself.
No, and it's not. I don't like, want a female. You know, there's no physical attraction to you guys. Like, you know what I mean? So it's funny.
For you,
it's got to be that other part. So,
but it's when you dive into a friendship, like you're super open and vulnerable with each other in a really strong friendship, and you get a lot out of it in that respect. But you are doing the same in a relationship too.
Yeah,
and so it kind of. There's a blurry line there, right? And
yeah.
Like, you know, even if you're, maybe it's stripped down to physical intimacy. I don't know. I don't.
That's interesting. You know, I think there is a chemical reaction in the brain. Something that happens with that attraction. For sure, a chemical
reaction in the brain, right?
Not just attraction as far as I find this person pleasing to look at or find this person is beautiful. You know what I mean? It's just that. You know, I think it just depends on everybody's ideals, obviously, that connections that you make with other people. And
well, maybe it was a little bit about that thing we were talking about earlier where, and this isn't necessarily the tenets of these things, but it's just so hard to define that. But maybe it's those things where it's that spark.
Right.
That leads to the romance.
Yeah.
That's not, you can't define it. It's not really a friendship.
Right.
It's a chemical, and it seems to be a very emotional, I don't know, healthy infatuation. It's, I don't know.
It's one of those questions we'll never have the answer for, but it's fun to speculate.
It's fun to speculate, and you know it.
Because there's way more.
But you know it when you see it.
Yeah.
You know it when you feel it, right?
Yep.
Like, right, that's more than a friend. That's a different connection. There's something else there.
Yep, it's some form of attraction, not this guy's cool, I want him to be my friend. This girl's cool, I want her to be my friend. It's like, this girl's cool, I want to spend, you know,
a
I
lot
spend time
of fucking
with her.
Time with
yeah,
her.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe that's it. Maybe you just hit on something there. Is that the desire for time, desire to share time and moments? I guess you could have that in a friendship too, but not in the way that it's like every day.
Right.
Like every moment. I want to share these very special moments with this person.
Just about getting that right combination too, you know, of what's going to work. And
yeah. But I don't know if it's something we can define like this.
No.
Is here. Let me put a list of what a friendship is. Let me put a list of what a relationship is. You'll be able to clearly see the difference.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could make those lists for you.
Man, I meet people all the time in the shop that are, really interesting, like, couples, you know? And it's like, wow, like, you guys
are totally
opposites.
First of all, how did you even
become
friends?
Yeah, it's so weird. And I met a couple the other day that met in middle school and had been together 63 years.
Oh, my God.
And they were just, like, laughing and having, like, the greatest time in the shop and throwing little one-liners at each other. And it was so funny. Like,
it's weird, though, but you would look at those people, you would say they're best friends.
Yeah, definitely. They are best friends. Like,
so, and then at what point is it like this is a relationship? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's a really hard thing to answer. And I don't.
You still got to have like that physical attraction. You know, it's weird.
I think you do to some degree, right? And for me, females, I'm interested in females, and it doesn't matter if people are interested in the same gender stuff. But more that you can become more or less attractive after I get to know you.
Right.
A woman becomes very beautiful after I get to know her and see her beautiful soul. And I can see that she moves around the world with grace and ease and empathy. And she'll become more beautiful to me physically more beautiful.
And that's the thing. It's like sometimes the physical attraction could happen first.
It's just that initial grab.
Yeah. That could be what draws you in is how beautiful they are. And I want to go ask her out, and then it could click. It may work. It may not. And then sometimes it's just that coworker that you've never been attracted to that over the years,
all of a sudden
you realize, yeah, that's like, you know, falling for this person. Like, yeah, you know, they are not who I thought they were. It's taken right. me this long to see. Like, so sometimes, you know, they, and that's probably a much better approach at it too. You know, if you start throwing yourself at everybody that you find physically attractive, you're probably, yeah, well, you know, it's not really gonna,
what do you think Tinder and Bumble are?
Yeah, exactly.
I've always been a little uncomfortable with those, only because to me they feel like human window shopping.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're basically
I'm too shy for that stuff.
Okay, people can write little profiles in them, right?
Right.
Which, fine, like, but if I come across a girl or a lady that's not a girl, I don't date girls, but if I come across a lady that's just writes work hard, play hard.
Yeah.
I'm just like, okay, you're attractive, but like, what are you, who are you? Who are you? I'm not into this. Like, I'm not a hookup culture guy.
Yeah, you
so.
Can tell kind of what their intentions are.
Right. And so that's not, I don't know, people get married off Tinder and Bumble all the time, I guess, but
Lance met his wife. Yeah. I mean, Match.com.
Obviously, how do you think I'm meeting people?
Right.
I'm meeting people from OkCupid, which is fine, but you know, I guess
that's like cool. Like seeing Lance cool. and like his wife, like it's amazing. Like their
it's cool, but so I guess cool. the difference is between like you haven't been on them, right?
No.
So I guess the difference is like OkCupid, the one that I prefer. It gives people the space to write a lot about themselves.
Am I one of the only dudes out there that is like, yes, never signed up?
Absolutely. 100%. I'm telling you, get on there. When I went into it, at the time, I would look for people who could write grammatically correct sentences. And that's going to tell you a lot about a person. What they were writing is going to tell you a lot about a person. As far as if they were like, hey, I like to go out clubbing every night. Nope. More power to you. Not a problem for me, but not
the type
attracted.
Of detail they get into.
Not attracted to it. The type of detail. What are your interests? What motivates you? So then now when you look at a longer profile, that's not just a picture with work hard, play hard. I get a better sense of who this person is. And I might be very attracted to this person just by what I'm reading.
Right. Yeah.
And obviously I have been right now. But otherwise it's just like you're swiping on pictures and I guess it starts with a physical attraction, but it doesn't necessarily lead to a relationship.
You gotta start somewhere,
Start somewhere, and I kind of embrace it. Not
you can check off like a couple things like quickly, ease of,
Yeah, this all sounds super
Or trying something out.
This all sounds super shallow, but it's also super human.
Right, it is. Not, it's just human nature.
Not superhuman, but just very human nature.
Yeah.
There's ways to mitigate it. Like I said, you just use a different app. You know, unless you're looking to hook up, then use those other ones.
Yeah.
Which is cool, too. I don't really care if people are in that mindset. It's all good, too.
It's funny. And from some of the couples I've met, like, I truly believe there's someone out there for everybody. You know?
You think there's just one?
No, I hope not, because I already feel like I met my one.
Yeah. I think there's...
No, I don't think so.
I think...
Is there just one band that you like?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's so many different facets to that. Is there just one movie that you like? I mean...
Well, so for example, on this, OkCupid, you can answer... I don't know, there must be 1,000 of these different multiple choice questions that you can answer.
Right.
So it helps you build your profile and your match profile. So then when you come across... When you come across people, you might say, like, it might say 95% match.
Right.
Or it might say 98% match.
Okay.
But at that point...
Yeah, what's...
What's the fucking difference? So, you're probably going to... You probably can connect deeply on a deep spiritual, emotional, physical level with several different people and be just as happy. I mean, and not settling.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
It's all about the feelings you get, from something.
Right. Maybe we're digging into a little bit to answer this question more is just the unexplained feeling that you can get from a friendship versus a relationship.
Yeah. And that goes for like, so many things. A song that moves you and another song that's completely different that moves you in the same way.
Yeah.
Or a movie or a person. You know what I mean? It's like you've got those emotions, and if they strike the right chords, you'll... Got something to build on at least at that point.
Right. And I think for the people that, you know, what I looked at for relationship wise, they always, the people that I was like connected with really, excuse me, they made me feel like I could see more potential in myself.
Right.
Like they made, they would make me feel limitless in what I could do in
life. Just kind of change your overall outlook.
Kind of change my overall outlook. And while we're very close, while you don't quite offer that sort of thing to me,
right?
While you're like super supportive, loving, and you help me in so many different ways, it maybe it's just in a different way that you help me versus somebody in a relationship would,
right?
Where
right.
It's like, whoa, you're expanding my whole view on life,
yeah.
Which, what does that mean? You know, it's hard to even define that.
I know. It's interesting. I think everybody can offer that to somebody, to anyone, you yeah. know, but it's just a matter of picking up on that or it relating to it at the right moment, you yeah. know? And
well, like I was telling you, I've had a situation, you know, I met one lady on OkCupid and she was super nice.
Right.
Like we connected on a lot of levels and, you know, had shared many interests. We could laugh together. We could do all that stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But after a couple of dates, I'm just like, it's not here.
Right. Yeah.
It seems more like a friend to me. Or not even a friend. Like I just, it's not what I'm looking for.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Even if you think, nothing God, why do I feel like that? I hate that I feel that way. But the fact is you do.
I did hate it.
But you do feel that way. I did. So you got to like come to terms with, even if it's shallow, even if it's not, you know, there is a reason that you feel that way and it's probably going to hold you back a little bit.
And it wasn't necessarily a physical thing.
Right.
Like I felt like she was attractive.
Right, right.
But
it's hard to put your finger on.
It's hard to put my finger on, but it, quote unquote, it wasn't there.
And obviously you could be wrong as well.
I could absolutely be wrong.
Right, right.
Maybe I should have given it 4 dates.
Yeah, there is no answer. But yeah, I know what you mean.
I also, as deeply introspective people like we are, I also trust my intuition.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm an intuitive.
Right.
But I also trust that I know what I'm feeling and doing. Yeah, so I guess the answer to that question is I don't know. I don't know what the fucking difference is until I see it.
Yeah, it's a feeling.
Definitely a feeling. Cool. More good questions. Those are fucking tough questions, some of them. But that's the point, right?
Yeah. That was a tough one. I feel like I didn't quite have a great answer for certain things just because it's something I've never really put much thought into. But yeah.
Well, hopefully that's the point. Yeah, exactly. We get these questions out there. People can think about them and
yeah.
offer, you know, send your, you can email the show, mmprojectpod@gmail.com with your answers to these questions too. So, I've asked all men the same 3 questions at the end. These are just kind of quick hitter questions. So you don't really have to explain if you don't want to, you can just answer the question and
okay.
move along. If you could travel back in time to visit your 16-year-old self, what would you say?
Hmm. Boy. That's deep.
So knowing the timeline that we've just spelled out about everything we've been through, we're going back to when we're 16 years old.
That's funny. Are there any like limits of like?
Nope. we're fucking time traveling. There's no limits on what we can do.
Well, you know, butterfly effect type yeah, thing. It's like, well, what you can't and you can't, you know. Like
maybe let's assume no butterfly specifics. Effect yeah. that you might be impacting your future.
Oh, that it's yeah, that's funny. I mean, that's unavoidable. You would be going back and telling your 16-year-old self something. Don't take things too seriously, you know?
Yeah.
I just feel like, you know, we have a funny sign in the shop that don't take life too seriously because nobody gets out alive anyways.
For sure.
So it's so true. You know, you can dwell on the little things and think and drive yourself up the wall, you know, and it's yeah. just like at the end of the day, like eventually you're going to stop thinking about it and you're going to get over it and past it. But I like, you know,
it. I like that one. That's always a beautiful lesson to try to embrace. Question 2, the greatest lesson, what to do or not to do you've learned from your dad.
Oh boy. I feel like communication. I feel like there are always times where, you know, if I saw a discussion between my mom and my dad, I feel like she was always very good at getting her point across or getting her, not getting her point across, but sharing her point of view.
Making it known what her point of view
is. Yeah, and, you know, sometimes when you put it in the right words, when you arrange it correctly, the other person just gets it. Where I feel like sometimes my dad has lacked on that a little bit, like, you know, communicating his point.
Yeah.
When he believes in it, you know, and that's, you know, that's a tough one. But
that's
pretty much it. That's basic.
I mean, communication is huge, right? Yeah, in all aspects of life, friendship, relationships, all of it.
Yeah. And there's obviously tons of variables in there. But yeah, sure. To sum it up, communication.
Okay. Cool. Thank you. Question 3, and this is kind of the fun one to end things off. If you could live the life of one man, real or fiction, who would it be and why? Real or fiction?
Okay, let's see.
Doesn't have to be alive now, obviously, since it's fiction, but for those people who are real, if you want to be fucking Abraham Lincoln, you could be if you want to.
Right.
Which, maybe not.
Is it weird? I've never thought about this before. I've never even, like, considered this.
Yeah.
This is a foreign question for me.
Right. Good, and I said man.
Oh, boy. You know, I'm, like, reaching for, like, people who, like... are just very enlightened and just have like things figured out, you know, like not fame, not money, not and nothing like that. Like it's just kind of the meaning of life type aspect of it, you know, just to be able to be happy. I can't even associate a person or a man with anything like that because it's probably not that easy. The Dalai Lama.
I was just going to say there's only one person. Yeah. It's the fucking Dalai Lama. You're going to be a llama?
Yeah, I think so.
That's pretty rad. I like that answer. Just pure bliss and happiness.
Yeah, just understanding what's important, you know. And obviously that can go deep of what's important to each person and why. Sure. But yeah, just the overall, you know.
Sure.
When it's all said and done, what was important, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easy for people to realize that at the end of their life when they're lying in their deathbed.
Yeah.
But, you know, I hope that, and I feel I got a little bit of that, you know, perspective but I hope to experience that before the final moments of my life.
I think we are.
Yeah.
We're recognizing it right here, right now. And you know what's important? Just conversations like this.
Right here, meow, meow.
Right here, right meow. these conversations are what's important. So, cool, buddy.
This has been fun.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for joining me again.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Love you.
Mind-opening experience. Love you too, dude.
Yeah, dude. Definitely do it again for a third time.
Definitely. Yeah, I'll look forward to it.
Episode number 10. Can't tell you how much I appreciate him going pretty deep and getting pretty vulnerable in that episode, just talking about his struggles with heroin use and his relationships and everything else. That was pretty powerful for me to sit down with him and talk about all those things face to face. And it's kind of also a reminder that the notion that there's one right way to do anything in life, to live a certain way, to be a man in a certain way is ridiculous. You know, he's had some struggles. And it's certainly maybe not the ideal way that he's become the man that he has, but it got him there. And he's got a powerful spirit and will. And he's a good dude at heart. And it just, you know... He didn't take the normal route, and he's still not living the normal life, whatever normal means. It's not the way that we all think that things should go by what we're told. But Tommy is living a life that's pure in the sense that he's got a pure heart. Loving guy, cares about his family, cares about himself, loves himself, and is just full of love. And I
couldn't ask for more out of a friend, out of a brother, than what Tommy gives. And he got there by being real with himself, by being open, by being honest. And it's just it was a powerful thing for me to be around. And Tommy, I appreciate your will to pull out of that. And I'm grateful to have you here with me now, buddy. Love you. Okay. That was a great one, y'all. Again, you can email the show, mmprojectpod@gmail.com. You can get at me on Twitter, @mmprojectpod, to contribute to What Women Wonder. Send me your questions, ladies. You know, really get the conversations going here. Always welcome the feedback. You know, don't forget to subscribe on Rate on iTunes. That's super helpful as well. And let me know what you think. All right. Till next time, y'all. Love you. Be present. Stay open. Much love.
And so there came a point in our evolution when we didn't guide life by distrusting our instincts. And had to think about it and had to purposely arrange and discipline and push our lives around in accordance with foresight and words and systems of symbols, accountancy, calculation, and so on. And then we worry. Once you start thinking about things, you worry as to whether you've thought enough.